Sooubway will always hold a special place in my empty heart, not because I have fond memories working there, but because some of you really liked it when I talked about working there. And I made buckets with those videos compared to what I was making at Sooubway, which was nice. Apparently I was hashtag relatable enough to connect with millions of people, and it took my channel to where it is today. And then less than 2 weeks later, I made a part two to that video, and I struck an even bigger chord with people.
Who likes the sequel better than the original?
People think that I use the word Sooubway in my videos so I wouldn't get sued. This is not true. I wasn't successful enough to get sued. They had other problems to deal with at the time. I called it Sooubway for a joke. In my first video, I said, I used to work at a very small local sandwich shop. I don't know if any of you guys heard of it. It's called Sooubway. I was making you think that I worked at an unknown place, and then I subverted your expectations by saying I worked at Sooubway. But now, at this point in my career, I am calling my previous place of employment Sooubway because I don't want to get soobed. The most requests I get for a video is Sooubway Part 4, but I never really considered making another one because I don't work there anymore. I have no new stories to talk about the place. But something happened recently, and I do want to talk about it. You see, the Sooubway I used to work at closed down, and I am so deeply upset at this news that the only way for me to cope is to make one last video about it. So this story happened a couple of years after I quit working at Sooubway. I was behind on a video, so that meant I was in a mentally damaging mindset called crunch mode, and I had been working all day, and I started getting hungry, and I still hadn't taken Floof on a walk, so I decided to kill two birds with one stone and eat Floof. Just kidding, I decided to take Floof on a walk to my local Sooubway. And before I entered the store, I picked up Floof and held her in my arms, because I'm not a psychopath. I know taking your dog into a restaurant is tacky and a health code violation, but this is a Sooubway we're talking about. I know how laid back it is here. There are no rules or health codes. One time when I was working at my Sooubway, this 10-year-old kid came in wearing a swimsuit and literally nothing else. And he was unsupervised. He didn't want a sandwich, all he wanted was a cookie, but this kid wasn't wearing shoes or a shirt, the two things you need to get service at a restaurant. So did I tell this shirtless delinquent to get lost? No, he had money, so I did business with him. I don't discriminate against shirtless people. Look, his mom was probably at the grocery store next door, and he just got done with swimming lessons, and he said something like, "Mother, I would be most grateful if you let me consume a pastry with high levels of sugar and simple carbohydrates." And his mom probably said, "Yeah, whatever, nerd. Go get something at Sooubway." So the point of this story is to let you know that I was the kind of employee who, as long as you were willing to pay for your food, didn't care what you were wearing or what health code you were violating. This is a gosh darn Sooubway. So I walk in with Floof, and it's completely empty, by the way. Seems like I'm the only one in this town that even likes Sooubway. And the worker, aka the only other person in the store, said, "Is that a service animal?" Floof's not a service animal, unless the service you want is someone to chew up all your stuff and bark at everyone. But she still emotionally supports me. When I tell her, "I'm gonna die alone," she tries to make me feel better by licking the inside of my nose. But I didn't want to lie to this guy about Floof's emotional support status, because if I said yes and he said prove it, I would be in trouble. So like the emotionally stable enough to not need a dog person that I am, I said, no. And he said, "She can't be in here. If the health inspector came in, they would fire me on the spot." Which, like, geez, dude, you're gonna let the health inspector treat you like that? Stand up for yourself once in a while. So I said, "Okay, I'll leave." Yeah, there are other restaurants in walking distance, Sooubway guy. The ramen place lets me order with Floof in my arms all the time. I know this because I've already been there twice this week, and the only reason I'm even getting Sooubway is because I don't want the ramen employees thinking that I'm a weird guy who brings my non-emotional support dog everywhere. You missed out, Sooubway. Do you know who I am? I used to work here. And then the guy called my bluff. He said, "Wait, we can make it fast." As fast as Jimmy John's? This kid's standing up for himself. I'm proud of him. I knew exactly what to tell him. "I want a foot-long ham sandwich on Italian bread with American cheese. I know that's the hardest cheese to pull apart with gloves on, but whatever." He sped run putting on the meat and cheese, and then he asked me, "What kind of vegetables?" And in my mind, I went, "Hold on, you didn't ask me if I wanted it toasted. I see what you're doing. You're trying to get this sandwich finished as quickly as possible, so you're not even going to ask me if I want it toasted and hope I forgot." "Well, it's okay, because I didn't want it toasted, but I'm onto you." And then Floof jumped over the counter, peed on the olives, and bit the guy in the jugular. And then licked the inside of his nose. Some people take their job way too seriously. Well, at least some Subway workers are more laid back like me. Like this one time not too long ago, I went back to the Subway I used to work at, and I didn't recognize any of the people there. But someone did get recognized in that store. Me! One of the workers said, "Are you the guy that made the cartoon about working here?" And I said, "Yeah." And then I decided to make his job interesting by telling him, "Hey kid, this is the place."
"What?"
"This is where it all happened, kid. These floors are the very same floors that I used to mop. You missed a spot over there." And this kid lost all 6 of his olives. Okay, I don't use my fame to get into places I'm not supposed to. Usually. But this kid was so excited, and I used to work here, so I asked him, "Can I go in the back?" Which is probably breaking a bajillion health code violations, but this kid didn't care. He let me in. It had been 3 years since I had been back there, and literally nothing had changed. I don't know if any of you have ever moved out of your parents' house, and then 3 years later you went back to visit and saw your childhood bedroom, but it was that sort of feeling. The chip boxes were still in the same place, inside the freezer all the food was pretty much where I left it, and the bulletin board had all the same papers. One of the papers was a list of all the employees with their names and phone numbers, and that list was so old that it still had all of my old coworkers' names and numbers, and it even had my own name and number still on the sheet. It had been crossed out, but I still went, "Ah!" and I punched it out with a pencil. Maybe that's how my phone number got leaked. And then I thought, I wonder if the other number is still here. In the very back of the room, there was this desk, and I got down on the gross, unmopped floor, and I scooted underneath the desk, and oh my gosh, it's still here. When I used to work there, one of my coworkers found this store's Wi-Fi password and wrote it down on the bottom side of the desk so then everyone could watch Netflix instead of work. And the employee had no idea it was there, and he typed it into his phone, and it still worked. "All right, don't tell people that I told you this," I said. "We can't let anyone know this secret." But then the place closed down, so now no one can get in trouble. Anyways, I'm gonna miss that place. It was gross, and I didn't love working there, but in the end, it was the most memorable job I had as a teenager, as it was the only other job that I had. It formed a good work ethic, I made new friends, and I even got to eat free food sometimes. But now I might get sued for this video, so we'll see what happens. So now, every time I walk into Subway with my non-service animal, a little part of me will be sad that my old Subway is in ruins. Okay, maybe it's not in ruins, but they'll probably turn it into a nail salon or something. Nothing lasts forever, so it's time to give Subway a proper burial. Me and my twin sister used to share a single Neopet account, which was a dumb decision because it was completely free to make a second Neopet account, and we already struggled at sharing things in the non-virtual world. But the reason we co-ran our Neopet account was because we didn't want to put our pets through a divorce, and because we wanted to save up our Neopoints for a paintbrush. For those of you who grew up with real video games, in Neopets, a paintbrush was a super rare item that would change your Neopet's appearance based off the paintbrush you used. There were Christmas paintbrushes, baby paintbrushes, Guy Fieri paintbrushes, and an invisible paintbrush that just turned your Neopet invisible. Why? When I said that paintbrushes were a rare item, I meant it. You see, your average Neopet paintbrush would sell for about 1 to 2 million Neopoints, and the most me and my sister had ever saved up was about 100,000. Why did you spend 3K on food? We're trying to get paintbrushes! It was Flower 67's birthday, and you spent 4K getting that stupid jacket! The jacket is cool and you know it! One day, my sister went searching in the back alleys of the internet for other ways to obtain a paintbrush, and she stumbled upon this website that said, "Get free paintbrushes," and all she had to do was enter in her username and password, and they'd send us a fairy paintbrush. Ooh. And in a moment of desperation, she entered in the login details of our shared account into a shady website, and you'll never guess what happened next. We log into our account, and there were 3 fairy paintbrushes in our inventory, and just kidding, we got hacked. And we lost all 100,000 of our Neopoints, and we never got the paintbrush we were promised. But we learned a valuable lesson that day, which was, people will try to scam you, so trust no one. We were lucky enough to only lose virtual money, but some people aren't that lucky. On the internet, you have to deal with people trying to scam you constantly. There's probably comments underneath this very video of people using my name and profile picture saying, "Click on this link and get a free gift card," and they always use a stupid amount of emojis so their comment sticks out more. I thought it was obvious that those comments were fake, but some people still fall for them. Listen, we need to get one thing straight about our relationship. If I ever use this many emojis, I want you to shoot me. Scammers like to target non-tech-savvy people, or what I like to call babies and baby boomers. There's a lot of things you can do to help prevent people from taking advantage of you on the internet, but my rule of thumb is that if something sounds too good to be true, it is. No one's giving out free gift cards, your long-lost uncle didn't wire transfer you money, and you can't get free paintbrushes. You can't cheat the system, that's just life, man. Also, if you ever get a pop-up saying your computer has a virus, call this number to fix it. Don't. A guy with an Indian accent named Jason will charge you real money to fix the virus, but won't do anything. Because you never had a virus in the first place. But those are all illegal scams. People go to jail over those scams. Identity theft is not a joke, Jim. Millions of families suffer from it every year. However, there are some scams that are, for some unknown reason, completely legal. And frankly, I think we should reopen Alcatraz for the people who do these scams. So here's my list for the top four legal scams that shouldn't be legal. The first legal scam is mobile games. I was doing a show with this 9-year-old kid named Araya, and in the show he was gonna punch me like this. And one day while we were rehearsing, Araya asked me, "Can I play some games on your phone?" So I gave him my phone and his dad told me, "Hey man, I don't even trust my kid with my phone." And I thought, what's the worst thing he can do besides tweet something or delete my YouTube channel? But he did something so much worse. He downloaded a free game, and inside the game, you could buy a VIP member version that gave you extra lives and more skins. The thing that was a scam was that the app gave you the VIP member free for 3 days, then charged you $6 a week. That's a dollar a day, not including Thursdays, to play some stupid mobile game. It's more expensive than a Netflix subscription and a tasty hot and ready $5 Little Caesars pizza. Now, some of you might be thinking, okay, yeah, that's a ridiculous price for a mobile game, but that's not a scam. They tell you how much it's going to cost right there on the screen. But here's the thing. Roughly zero people bought the VIP member pass because they were fans of the game and didn't mind the price. No one is willing to pay a weekly bill for a game where all you do is this. But 100% of the people who paid for the subscription are kids using their parents' phone and bought the VIP pass because they have no concept of money. And you don't even have to enter in your credit card information, so it's easier for kids just to hit the purchase 6,000 gems button. It's targeting kids, and I don't like it. Scam. I wish I had the confidence of a mobile game developer to charge someone $312 a year to play their stupid game. My proposal to fix this scam is to ban mobile games entirely and everyone play Tetris 99. Nintendo Online is cheaper than the VIP club subscription anyway. The second legal scam is college. Textbooks. We live in a society where all human knowledge and misconceptions are contained on the internet. But if you print out that knowledge and bind up the pages, suddenly you made a best-selling book that people are required to buy. There are some textbooks that are just a CD or a code that you need a computer to even access the book, so what's the point of buying the textbook if you have a computer that's connected to the internet in the first place? And don't tell me that the books are better for people that don't have internet. I know you have an internet connection, 'cause come on. My solution to this scam is to drop out and make YouTube videos. The third legal scam is psychics. I don't want to debate whether or not psychics are real, because they're not. My horoscope told me so. My belief is that no one can talk to dead people because we're not living in a cartoon. And it just makes me sick that there are psychics who are taking advantage of people who are grieving and are so desperate to talk to their loved ones again that they'll try anything, even paying people to lie to them. Ooh, I burned my finger on that hot take. Now, I don't think that every psychic out there is trying to scam people. Most of them are. But I do think there are some psychics who legitimately believe that dead people use them as a vessel to talk to their living relatives. And in their three eyes, they are helping and giving their clients closure. I understand that a very small percentage of them are just trying to help. But it doesn't matter because they're all fake. My solution to this scam is that you don't pay a psychic unless they can guess how much money you're going to pay them. Should be close to zero, hopefully. And the last legal scam is multi-channel networks. Wait, do you guys hear that? It sounds like bridges being burned. When your YouTube channel starts growing, you'll get contacted by a multi-channel network, or MCN, and they'll make empty promises that if you join their network, they can help your channel grow and earn more money. And they'll brag about how many people are in their network, when really that just means there's less of a chance they'll care about you. And all you have to do to join is give them a percentage of your YouTube money every month. And once you sign your soul away, what a network will actually do is nothing. Except take a cut of your money every month. It's like showing your dog a tennis ball and then pretending to throw it, and then when the dog realizes he's chasing nothing, he's already signed a 3-year contract to keep chasing the fake ball. I know this last scam might not apply to everyone watching, but if this video helps at least one up-and-coming YouTuber to not join an MCN, then it will have been worth it. So that's my list for the top 4 legal scams that should not exist and die. I don't think this video is going to actually change anything. People will always be greedy and try and get money any way they can. So if there's anything you should take away from this video, is that I'm giving away free gift cards! Click the link in the description to claim your prize! Good morning, everyone. I hope you enjoyed my list of the top 4 legal scams that should be illegal. If there's any psychics in the audience that I offended, you should have known before watching this video that I don't agree with you. And if there's any MCNs watching this video, please stop emailing me. So I'm really excited to announce some Halloween merch, which includes a freaking Halloween costume. I know it's August, but I don't really get a lot of chances to update you guys on things, so we're doing it now. If you want to get your hands on a costume, you should order it soon, because we only ordered a certain amount of costumes, so once they sell out, they won't be ready until next year. If you have any questions about the sizing or the shipping, then be sure to ask my business email. Thank you for watching this video and sticking around to listen to the end card. I know a lot of people click off once the end card starts, but at least you're cool. A big thanks to everyone who worked on this video, and until next time, wear your seatbelt.
I think we humans find things covered in hair more cute. We're more attracted to things covered in hair. And that's why I'm a furry.
Hey, James!
Hey! Furby?
Everyone's gonna put on $2,000 animal costumes and walk around. Do you want to come?
No. But don't let me stop you from this hobby of yours. I may not understand why you like it, but as long as you're not harassing or hurting anyone, or anything, then do whatever makes you happy. Also, shower regularly and eat your vegetables. So, in the last video, I made a haha joke about being a furry. I said, given the choice between an animal with fur and one without fur, that most people would think the animal covered in fur would be cuter. And, ha, if we applied that logic to people, then everyone would be a furry. I got a mixed bag of responses to that joke.
Okay, I was looking at all the comments about James saying he's a furry, and in my opinion, it shouldn't matter. If James is a furry and he told you, that means he trusts you and thinks that you would accept him the way he is.
I don't care, I'm not watching him anymore.
Well, that's really nice of you, Mr. Branch. But I still don't trust you. A lot of people were confused, so for the remainder of this video, every time I make a joke, it will be followed by this message. Two muffins are in an oven. One says, "Boy, it's hot in here." And the other says, "Yeah, you live in Arizona, what'd you expect?" But I'd say for the most part, you guys were very accepting. So that's good to know if I ever do want to come out as something. But if we wanted to talk about someone who is a furry, then look no further than 600 BC. You have to look pretty far. What am I talking about? I'm talking about this man named Aesop. Aesop. Aesap. Aesuabwe. This man was the world's first furry. Okay, I'm calling him a furry because he wrote a lot of fables with talking animals in them, so I'm making fun of him for writing a lot of furry fanfiction.
I'm making fun of a dead person.
I made a video about a year and a half ago reading some of Aesop's fables, and that video is what this official Odd Ones Out shirt is referencing. Fables are short stories, usually with talking animals, that have a moral at the end. Characters in fables don't have names. They're just simple, cookie-cutter characters. You don't have a fable with Michelangelo and Raphael from the Ninja Turtles. No, you have a fable with the tortoise and the other tortoise. So I'm going to read some more of Aesop's fables, but I'll be focusing on just one character. The fox. The fox gets around. You could pick any animal, and a fable exists with that animal being taken advantage of by a fox. The fox and the Triceratops. That fable probably exists. With the amount of fables the fox has been in, you'd expect him to be more moral than Gandhi. Aesop really liked foxes. His persona was probably a fox.
The fox and the goat.
So once there was this fox eating some cheese, he wasn't looking where he was going, and he fell down a well. The fox had no way of getting out. Then a goat just so happened to be walking by and said, "Hey, what are you doing down there, you silly goose?" "Actually, I'm a fox," said the fox. "I was just drinking some of this lovely water. Is it good?" "Oh, it's only the best water in the entire universe." So the goat decided to jump down and join the fox. But then the fox used the goat. He used her as a stepping stool to get out of the well.
The website I'm reading this from has an interactive picture that shows the events that happened. Let's watch. So then the goat says, "Whoa, buckaroo, aren't you going to help me out?"
No.
"Instead, I'm going to teach you a moral. If you had as much sense as you have beard, you would have been more cautious about finding a way to get out again before you jumped in. Look before you leap, you stupid idiot." "Okay, goodbye."
"But, Fox, you fell into the well, too. You were the one not looking. The goat looked. You just lied to her. And you got away with it. So the real moral of the story is, you can abuse the people in your life with no consequences, as long as they end up dead in a well." The Fox and the Crab. This fable is pretty short. Once there was a crab who was tired of living next to sand, so he decided to move to a meadow.
And then a fox ate him.
That's the real fable!
It counted as one of Aesop's 665. And the moral is, be content with your lot. Don't move, don't travel, don't try and live in a better location because a fox might eat you! Just live in your studio apartment and deal with it!
The lion, the bear, and the fox.
This baby goat, he's a kid, went up to a lion and a bear and said, "Have you seen my mom? I haven't seen her in a couple of weeks. She said she was going to get some water and a pack of smokes, and she hasn't come home." But the bear and the lion didn't care. They started fighting each other over who would get to eat the baby goat. And then a fox jumped out of the bushes, killed the kid, and ran off with it. I wonder how much Aesop got paid for these. Again, the website has a very nifty interactive picture that shows you exactly what occurred. And the moral of the story? Those who have all the toil do not always get the profit. I'm not exactly sure what that means. Seems to me the moral should be, don't talk to lions and bears, and watch out for foxes. The Fox and the Grapes. Basically what happens in this fable was that once there were some grapes growing on a really tall tree. Do grapes grow on really tall trees? Maybe they did in 600 BC. And the fox really wanted some of the grapes. Do foxes like grapes? Maybe they did in 600 BC. And so he tried to get them himself, but he couldn't reach them. And since the fox didn't want to ask for help, probably because all the other animals hated him, he said, I didn't want your sour grapes anyway." There are many who pretend to despise and belittle that which is beyond their reach. Which is where I think the phrase, money is the root of all evil, came from. People were upset that they couldn't get money, so they just said, I didn't want your evil money anyway." Okay, here's the last fable. This one's kinda sad. The Fox and the Scorpion. So the fox, this whole time, had been gathering ingredients to make the perfect sandwich. He got the meat from an orphaned goat, a sautéed depressed crab, and some cheese. He was also going to get a side of grapes, but he decided to go without them. When all of a sudden, a scorpion comes up to him and said, "Hey, can I get a ride across the river? I'm too small to swim across." "Ha! Nice try, Slick! If I gave you a ride, you'd just sting me." No, if I did that, we'd both drown. It would be a lose-lose. "All right, I'll help you out. I've been acting like a huge jerk lately, all to make this one sandwich. But I'm gonna change starting now. For once, I'm gonna be helpful." So the fox gives the scorpion a ride, when all of a sudden... "Why'd you sting me?" "Because I'm a scorpion. It's in my nature."
"Yeah, but you're a talking scorpion! I thought you'd have enough cognitive sense to know not to do that!
You even said yourself that if you stung me, we'd both die."
"Actually, I can hold my breath for 6 days."
"What?"
"Yeah, watch."
"My sandwich."
And then the fox died. He had no family, no friends, and no sandwich. And that's why you never help scorpions.
Lied to you guys. I pranked you. This fable wasn't the fox and the scorpion. It's actually the frog and the scorpion. The fox never got stung. He knows better than to help out another creature. Fox is too busy looking out for number one, baby. The frog's dead, though. And if it makes you happy, the scorpion died, too. And the fox got to enjoy his sandwich. Still alone, but... the end. Man, what a plot twist. Aren't I so good at telling stories? So what did we learn, children? We learned, don't ask for help. Don't help out others. Lie to people, take what you want, and you'll succeed.
Okay, so I'm just going to get right into the meat of this topic. I love reading fables. If you weren't paying attention in 10th grade English, a fable is a short story, usually with talking animals that have a moral at the end of them. A good way to remember is that the word fable starts with an F, and so does furry. So, some examples of a fable you might have heard are the tortoise and the hare, Humpty Dumpty, Pacific Rim, and the autobiography of Hillary Clinton. This one's a fable because the main character's a bit. I'm just kidding. Humpty Dumpty's not a fable. So there's this guy named Aesop, and he's best known for creating a bunch of fables. He's written over 655, and seriously, I don't know why for some reason we can't find the exact number. How many fables has he written? Over 655! Oh, so 656? Like, what's the range here? Unfortunately, he has died, so he won't be writing any more fables. So why can't we get the exact number? Like, what the heck, guys? And he also had a very strong no-photo policy, so no pictures of him were ever taken. Because he was born around 500 BC. I don't even think he knew what a camera was, so here we go. This is what he supposedly looked like. And what I like most about fables is that the wording is so, like, Shakespearean and old-timey, and it makes you feel like you're smart for reading these short paragraph-long stories. And even better, they have a moral at the end of them, so once you're done reading, you're like, oh man, that was deep. Like, every single fable can end with one character dropping a microphone. Like, the whole story is just build-up to that one moral moment. Okay, so I'm going to read some of my favorite fables to you guys. I'm not going to read them how Aesop wrote them, though, because he had so many unnecessary smart-sounding words when really all of his fables could be shortened down to, like, 3 sentences. So here we go. Aesop's fables in my own words.
Belling the cat.
So there's these mice that get together, and they're trying to come up with a plan to get this cat to stop killing them. And one mouse is like, oh, we could put a bell around the cat, you know? So now we could hear it or something. And this other mouse is like, yeah, all right, yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Who's going to put the bell on? Okay, so this one's kind of actually stupid. I don't really know what the moral is. Like, maybe no one wants to be the person to sacrifice themselves for the good of humanity or my sanity or... Okay, here's my version of the rest of that story. So after the mouse said that, the other mouse goes, oh, geez, other mouse, you're right. I didn't think of that. Well, I guess I say we all grab our toothpicks and kill the cat. You know, at least that ending made sense. A bell? Pfft. How about you poison it? Or, like, move somewhere where there's not a cat in the first place.
The horse and the groom.
So there's this horse and a groom, which is not the wedding kind. It's an actual groomer who just calls himself a groom. So this groom spends all this time brushing the horse and making it look pretty. And he also takes some of the horse's oats and sells it for extra cash. Okay, stop right there. Aren't oats supposed to be really cheap? Isn't that a thing? Okay, so the horse is getting malnourished and says, you know, you should really stop worrying about brushing me and more about feeding me. Man, that's deep, I think. The moral is, don't steal your horse's oats. Especially if it talks, like, you will never hear the end of it. The farmer with the goose with the golden eggs. So there's this farmer, and he somehow gets a goose that lays golden eggs. And now you might be thinking, what's with all these gooses that lay golden eggs? Jack and the Beanstalk did it. The Simpleton Brothers did it. Well, did you know that this is the very first time a goose laying golden eggs has ever appeared in writing? I actually don't know if that's true. I made it up. I mean, it might be true. I don't know. It was 500 BC, you guys. It was a long time ago. And the goose only lays one egg a day. And the farmer gets greedy and wants more eggs. So he thinks, oh, I bet all the eggs are inside the goose. So he chops up the goose, and guess what? There's only more goose parts in there, not eggs. Okay, so the moral, know how basic things work. Especially if you're a farmer and you don't know how geese work. Or at least be close friends with someone who knows this. Hey man, I don't think that's how geese work. I mean, I get how you might think this is a magic goose because everything about this is physically impossible. But we could already live pretty decent lives with just one egg a day. Like, we're already in the top 1% now. How can a goose carry around a golden egg inside of itself? Do you know how heavy gold is? If there's solid gold, can a goose ever have babies? This seems like an evolutionary dead end to me. The bat and the weasels. So there once was this bat, and he fell. Somehow. Aesop never really says how it fell. It's a bat. It can fly. Okay, so the bat gets caught by a weasel. Like, one of these things? Okay, so you're saying that a bat gets caught by a weasel because he fell. Whatever, okay. So the weasel says, I am an enemy to all birds, and I'm going to eat you. And the bat goes, I'm not a bird, I'm a mouse. Oh, what are these things that look like wings? Oh, these? That's my blanket. Because I'm cold. Okay, that part wasn't in the story. So the weasel lets him go, but then it happens again with a different weasel, and this weasel says, I am an enemy to mice, and I'm going to eat you. And the bat goes, oh, tiny weasel, but I'm not a mouse. I'm a bird. And then he lets him go. Again. Sometimes Aesop wrote the moral you're supposed to take at the end. He did it with this one, and the moral verbatim is, look and see which way the wind blows before you commit yourself. So are you saying to follow the crowd? Like, go with the flow? That's not really good moral, Aesop. Also, why didn't the bat just say, I'm a bat, losers, and I can fly later? It's also teaching you to make up lies on the spot that contradict your first lie. That's how you get caught lying. Okay, so last fable, the fox and the crow. So this crow has a piece of cheese in her beak, and this fox comes along and is like, oh, you're so beautiful. Oh, I just love your feathers. I wish I could just hear you sing. This crow is now very flattered, and she goes to sing, and then the cheese falls out of her mouth, and the fox eats it. And then the last line, this is beautiful, the fox says, you have a voice, madam. I see. What you want is wits. Moral of the story, everyone wants to steal your cheese. Don't let your guard down for a second. That would be a good t-shirt design. Like, it would say, everyone wants to steal your cheese, and then it would have like a silhouette of a fox and a crow. Someone make that t-shirt. I'll buy it.
I don't know if any of you guys had to do this in high school, but in my high school, you had to take a physical education credit to graduate. So normally, to get it out of the way, in 9th grade, all the boys would take PE, and all the girls would take dance. But sometimes, the really white boys would take dance. And you could always point them out during dance recitals. So I actually took PE my sophomore year because I went to a preparatory school in 9th grade. But that was okay because I fit in quite perfectly with all the other skinny white boys. And there's like this long moment in the first 10 minutes of class where all you do is sit in the locker room and wait until coach says, okay, let's do this. So one day we all got bored and just started flicking water bottle caps. You know, just the caps and the little whoop-ah! We just started flicking, you know, like little tiny frisbees. We took caps from the trash and we would just whoop-poo, shoot them at each other, you know? Whoop-ah! And it was all fun, you know, and no one really got hurt, and I'm pretty sure I'm the one who started it, but whatever. And then when we did our physical education class, it was like extra hard. Like we ran 2 laps instead of 1, and we had to do wall sits while holding medicine balls. And then afterwards, when we were all sweaty and tired, the teacher goes, you want to know why today was extra hard? It's because you're flicking water bottle caps at each other.
What?
Fast forward a couple, I don't know, a month, and these 2 kids get the idea to play a game called Bodies. And if you aren't familiar with that game, it's a game where you punch someone, that's it. You're not allowed to hit their face though, just their bodies. Which is why it's called Bodies. And you'd think at least one of us would be like, hey you guys. Oh wait, their voices should be squeaky.
Hey you guys, coach didn't like that we were throwing water bottle caps before. Maybe we shouldn't do this.
So, you know, I obviously couldn't let that happen without watching. And these 2 kids start playing, and 1 kid isn't even punching back, which is a strategy I would not use playing that particular game. And then all of a sudden, the dude taking the punches falls off his feet and hits his head on the hard tile and doesn't get up.
Did I win?
So we're a couple of young bros, and we're like, hey, bro. 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 So we had to tell the teacher, and the teacher got the nurse, and a little time passed, and at that point he did wake up a little, and the coach asked him what happened. And he knew he would get in trouble if he told the truth, so he lied and said,
I don't know, I just passed out and got all these punch marks.
Although it is possible he could have legitimately forgot. And then the coach asked the class what happened, and everyone was like, oh yeah, geez man, yeah, he just passed out. Yeah, I saw him, he just flopped down. And we almost got away with it, except 1 kid, I forget his first name, but his last name was like Ferwillikins or something. Ugh, and he had the stupidest bowl cut too. Ow, so stupid. He tells the coach, they were playing Bodies, and person A falcon punched person B. And then we already know we're in a whole heck of a trouble. But the nurse called the PE teacher and said, this kid needs to get his stuff. And coach said to the class, someone needs to get this kid his stuff. I got it. I'll get his stuff. And I'm told that the class had to do lunges down the track field. But I wouldn't know, because I took my sweet time getting him his stuff. And then a year later, I heard our PE teacher got fired. For separate reasons.
Yeah, I'm not really sure you should do a video about Arizona. I mean, only people from Arizona will think it's funny. I'm gonna do it anyway. So if you saw my bashes video, which I think was the fifth one in the French trip series, you'll know that I live in Arizona. So cool, I'm gonna talk about it. Pros and cons of living in Arizona. Pro. We got cacti. And in fact, we, and a tiny bit of Mexico, are the only place in the world with saguaro cactuses. I mean cacti. Boom. And as an extra bonus, they look really funny with Christmas decorations on them. Con. Not a lot of trees. Which I mean, who needs trees? They just stand there. All they do is provide shade and oxygen. I guess you could climb them. I don't need that. Instead of trees, we have these things. Pro, we have In-N-Out. Okay, that store technically originated in California, but it's moved to here, and it's delicious. I actually applied there, and I got an interview. They didn't hire me, though. You guys are missing a con, the heat. It's unbearable. In the summer, you can expect the weather to be in triple digits. We don't have to be told not to leave our dog or babies inside cars, because we're already dying of heat stroke while the air conditioning is on. Pro, we don't have daylight savings. Which might seem like a good thing, but the only reason we don't is because con, the sun is trying to kill you. Yes, it's hot here. Pro, it's... I think we got the Grand Canyon, which is like one of the seven wonders of the world, I guess. And it can be seen from the Great Wall of China. I'm just kidding, that's not true. Oh, I got it. Pro. Citrus. We grow oranges, lemons, and grapefruits. They only get ripe in the winter, though. These are actually part of the three C's of Arizona. We have citrus, copper, cats, cacti, and cattle. And calcium, because of all the sunshine we're getting. Con. It hardly rains here. Yes, that's a bad thing, because I never learned how to close an umbrella. Okay, that's an exaggeration. Of course I know how to close an umbrella, but it was a very hard learning curve. And Arizona was not built to get rained on. When we do get rain, streets flood, schools close, and trees, well, these kinds of trees, fall. Pro. So, yeah, the summer can be unbearable, but winter is a total breeze. Winter is when the weather is perfect. While everyone else has to deal with stuff like this, here all we get is ripe lemons perfect for making cold lemonade with. And because our winters are so not really wintery, we have a bunch of old people who move down here in the winter and then move back to their summer home in Minnesota or whatever. They're like birds who migrate south in the winter, but like snowbirds, which is coincidentally what we call them. So really it's sort of a pro slash con. On one side we have tolerable weather, but on the other side, old people. You know, I can't really think of any more pros, so we're just gonna say more cons. Apparently, Phoenix was ranked number 10 on the rudest cities in America, which, okay, how do you measure a city's rudeness level? Was the person making this list, like, seeking out rude people and comparing them to other cities, like, oh, this person in Phoenix called me a piece of shit, but this person in Wyoming only called me a piece of crap. So, I guess Phoenix just has more rude people. Add it to the list.
And also on the same list, we apparently had some of the worst drivers around, which I can sort of see because everyone here drives 7 to 15 miles over the speed limit. But I really hate slow drivers, so it's kind of a pro for me, but I guess it's a con. Also, did you guys know that a haboob is another name for a dust storm? And I know this because we've had to use that word before. And because we call them that, dust storms become 20 times more awesome. In fact, we're probably excited to see haboobs just so we can make jokes about them. As soon as we see a cloud of dust on the horizon, we all go, ah, guys, it's a haboob! You guys remember us? This is what we call it. And then we go inside and make jokes like, oh man, this is one massive haboob. And lastly, probably the worst con of all, the heat. I know I already mentioned it three times, but I don't think I've really driven my point home here. It's so hot here. I am literally sweating right now as I'm recording this, and that's not on the script.
Please get me out.
And some of you watching are probably like, but James, it's a dry heat, right? That means it's not as bad. Let me answer that question with another question, and then an answer. Do you know what else a dry heat is? Ovens. And volcanoes. And that's where I live.
You might be thinking that me giving you advice on pitching a show is insincere or not applicable because of that. But listen, there was still a whole lot of work that went into my pitch for a TV show, and even with all my subscribers, statistically, I still got turned down way more times than I got picked up. If Netflix is just green-lighting everyone with a big sub count, then why doesn't I Did a Thing have a show, huh? Why doesn't Mr. Beast have a Netflix show? Oh, actually, he's doing just fine. By the way, if you are someone with a lot of subscribers, don't just walk into a studio and say, "Hey, I have a lot of subs, give me a show," okay? Walk in and say, "Hey, I have a lot of subs and free merchandise for you," okay? Diversification is key. Networks like Netflix, Cartoon Network, and Nickelodeon, they're in the biz of making content for their platform and in turn getting you, the viewer, to watch said content on said platform, thus generating a perpetual money-making cycle that everyone, including you, benefits from. Now, the executives in charge don't have all the time to come up with every single show they're going to make, so they turn to the general public, open their doors, and will listen to anyone pitch them their idea for a television series. But even if you have an Emmy-winning idea, if you're not able to properly sell your idea and win over the hearts of the network executives, it's not going to get picked up and developed. Then your only option is to independently fund and develop your idea yourself. But what kind of a loser would do that? And thus the art of pitching a show is born. You could honestly teach a whole class about this. Now, obviously, you can't just walk into a studio empty-handed. Alright, big idea. What if we do a show where there's a talking alligator, right? And he's like, "Yo, what? I'm a crocodile." You gotta come prepared, but also not be over-prepared. I was actually surprised to learn this, but going into the pitch room with finished scripts, turnarounds of your characters, and plushies will actually hurt your chances of getting picked up. The reason for this is because executives will sometimes like to change parts of your show, and if you already have all the characters and story mapped out, they'll not want to pick you up because they feel like they can't change anything. You're not even supposed to write any scripts until after you get the green light, because the executives have to approve all the scripts you make and the writers that you want to hire. So if you ever pitch a show, just be open for changes. Which, I can attest, is a very different experience to what it's like on YouTube. What you do want to bring to the pitch is this super important document called a show Bible, and then you need to convert to that show's religion. The show Bible is a document that contains everything your audience needs to know about your show. In the beginning of a show Bible, there should be a 1-2 sentence description that covers the main synopsis of your show. It's kind of like an elevator pitch, but here in the biz, we call it a log line. I'll give you mine as an example. When James's parents move them to a tiny desert town where eccentric scientific minds have been brought together to do unfettered experiments, James finds himself surrounded by the children of these scientists and the offspring of their experiments. The result? Unlike in his last town, James is no longer the oddest kid around. I don't know if the show's been out by the time this video comes out, but we kinda lost the new in town theme. Like I said, the executives want to make changes. After the logline, you write a page-long backstory where you go more in-depth with your idea. Answer questions like, who are the characters? What are their goals? Where do they live? Just general stuff, because after the backstory page, you're gonna write all about your characters. This is the part of the Bible where you can just go balls to the wall with details and description. Who, how, and why are your characters? What are their wants, needs, fears, flaws, likes, dislikes, and general personality traits? These are important traits to think about even if a specific detail isn't going to be reflected in the show. Like in my Bible for the crocodile, Max, some of the things we said he liked were the rain, raw chicken, and laying on warm rocks in the sun. Now, I don't think he got to enjoy a single one of those things in the show, but these are the types of questions you have to answer to get the clearest idea of who your characters are. You should also include drawings of your characters. This can help show their personality and body language, but just keep them to doodles, because again, they're subjected to change. Next, there needs to be drawings and descriptions of specific locations that the characters spend a lot of time in. This will help show the overall world and tone of the show. And lastly, I know it's long, that's why it's called a show Bible and not a show pamphlet. You need to write out page-long episode ideas. not scripts.
This will show the executives what a typical episode would look like and the direction and tone you want to go with the show. Honestly, there's so much that goes into a show bible. I'm really only scratching the surface. If you are genuinely interested in pitching a show, or even a little interested in cartoons, then I would highly recommend looking at other show bibles online for inspiration and how they should be formatted. It's pretty fun looking through older show bibles and seeing the earliest versions of your favorite cartoons. This is what Mermaid Man and Barnacle Bill were going to look like. I mean, look, isn't that cool? Unfortunately, you can't just hand an executive your show bible and silently wait for them to finish reading it. You also have to energetically and flawlessly pitch your show. Executives listen to like 9 pitches a day, so if you're not selling your show with 110% enthusiasm, they're gonna pass right over you. So you have to practice your pitch like your paycheck depends on it. Me and the showrunner I worked with, Ethan Banville, practiced our pitch so many times. We practiced in front of a mirror, to our family members. We filmed ourselves practicing, and then watched the footage, gave each other notes, and then burned the evidence. We memorized our whole Bible, but despite everything, the first time we pitched, I was still nervous. I had no idea what pitching a show would be like. We brought in our stapled Bible that we typed out on Microsoft Word, and I thought, this isn't enough. This Bible doesn't even have a spine. I still thought we needed to bring in finished scripts and character designs to show the executives how much thought we put into the show. But Ethan reassured me, no, the executives don't want to be overwhelmed with content. But when we got to the lobby, I saw the group ahead of us pitching their show, and they had cardboard cutouts of their characters, and they were handing the executives custom plushies, and I turned to Ethan, we are so underprepared. When we got inside, we pitched the show just like we practiced 1,000 times, and then the executive told me that no studio would ever want to work with a YouTuber. Yeah, sometimes they don't even wait to tell you in an email that they're going to pass. Sometimes they just get it over with right then and there. So, you know, not the best confidence boost for your first pitch. But we kept on pitching, and we kept hearing a lot of no's. And if you ever pitch, get ready to hear that response. Everyone in Hollywood has a story of being turned down by everyone and then finding the right home for their idea. And sometimes really talented people work for years on an idea and it goes nowhere. So the fact that I was even able to make something and it didn't get canceled, I'm incredibly grateful for. But getting a show greenlit is not the only way to get it made. You can always put in the work and develop something yourself. No, you won't have a network backing you with tons of money, but if you truly believe in your idea, you should at least put something out for the world to see and over time build your own audience and then, who knows, maybe even sell it to a network. But not the one who said they never work with a YouTuber. They're horrible. Okay, that's all the time I got. I gotta get back to watching Oddballs streaming October 7th on my Netflix.
So I feel a bit obligated to talk about France. It was really fun, really. Okay, one thing though. Every meal is like super important in France. Except for breakfast for some reason. For lunch and dinner, everyone sat down together as a family and talked. But for breakfast, they were just like, here's a croissant. Okay, let's go. I mean, breakfast is only the most important meal of their day. And I was going to make a joke about how they have an entire aisle of cheese in the grocery store, but I realized back home we have an entire aisle for candy and ice cream. So whatever. We went to the Louvre, which was like so amazing. They had really cool art by famous people. They had the famous statue with no arms. They had these really fancy rooms because apparently people used to live here. And probably the most famous painting in the world, the Mona Lisa. That room was super crowded. And right behind the Mona Lisa, there was a super tall painting that probably took 20 years to make. The picture frame was as wide as my body. But were people crowded around this one taking pictures? No. I don't even know what this one's called. The American school system has failed me yet again. And as someone who likes to draw, I thought it was really cool to look at the amazing color and details. Also, I took a bunch of pictures of butts. Look, this is the really famous no arm one. Look at her butt. So I had a good time, but afterwards we went to the Picasso Museum, Modern Art Museum, and this other one. I forgot its name. It was French. And it's kinda weird going into these places as someone who likes to draw cartoons. Oh, I like the colors, they're pretty neat, and oh, putting the face on the side of the head, that's an interesting design. But I kinda have to draw the line somewhere, Picasso. I mean, just look at this! Why is it framed? Someone framed this. And Picasso was a good artist. Shoot, he's better than me. So why did they draw this stuff to hang up? Would you call this his best work? It's not just Picasso. Look at the modern art museums. My favorite piece was the painting of a black ring. In fact, I loved it so much that I drew over it in my phone and probably spent more time in thought than the actual artist. I'm not saying the more real a painting looks, the more artsy it is. Wait, yes I am. I mean, look at my drawings. No, seriously, look at them. Their heads are super round and they're so white they can't dance. If I entered an art contest against Leonardo da Vinci, he would win! Because his stuff took talent. It's not easy to draw something that looks exactly like it does in real life. But cartoons? They're easy. They're so easy. And I know I'm leaving out paintings with color schemes and forms. Now after seeing this, I've come up with something called the Keith Haring Principle to help people like me better understand modern art. In the late 70s, a man named Keith Haring drew graffiti in subway stations and had sort of a unique design. Whenever he started to draw graffiti, he never thought about what the finished product was going to be. He just drew whatever he felt like. He ended up making thousands of them, and people started to notice his unique characters. Soon he got more and more famous and popular. Now he's at the point where you can buy t-shirts and mugs of his drawings, and I think that's really cool. They're interesting designs, and I would wear them. Do they belong in a museum? No. Keith made thousands of these small, simple drawings. They're still art, but not art people should pay to see. They should pay to wear and drink out of it. And by the way, this stuff is in no way research, so I'm talking completely out of my butt right now, but I think Picasso and the circle painting should be on t-shirts, or kids' books, or even webcomics. So people would say, hey, I like your shirt. Thanks, I like the design, and would never frame it and hang it up on my wall.
I just wanted to say, thanks. I'm glad you came along.
Partner.
I wasn't happy with the lighting in the last video, so I might have gone overboard for this one. If you only watch this video for the sprinkles, hold on. I need to get serious with my audience. Guys, do you like my haircut? Jaden's mom actually did it for me. Okay, but seriously, guys, something big just happened. Dwayne The Rock Johnson retweeted one of my comics. Woo! But can we talk about how the comic that got The Rock's retweet has less likes than the tweet I made about The Rock retweeting one of my comics? But also, as some of you might know, my channel recently hit 1 million subscribers. The big 100000. Which is a little terrifying. Here's a YouTube trivia question for all the little kiddies in my audience. Who was the first YouTuber to get 1 million subscribers? I'll give you a hint.
Okay. Hey, it's Fred!
When Fred posted his 1 million subscriber special, I was only 12 years old at the time, almost 13. But I remember watching that as a little kid and just thinking, whoa, 1 million subscribers, that's so many. But now, I'm not feeling how I thought I would feel. Maybe I'm just too young, or maybe I just don't feel anything. I watched YouTube all the time growing up. Charlie the Unicorn, Potter Puppet Pals, The Gummy Bear Song, Knox Corner, Salad Fingers. Those videos were my jam, and now it's so weird to think that my videos could be someone else's jam. I know you guys all want to see the sprinkles, so... So some of you might be new to this channel, and what I do for subscriber milestones is I pour however many subscribers we have onto a cake. So that way you can look at the cake and see you. Well, unless you subscribed after this video came out. When I started this tradition, I didn't realize just how many people were subscribed to me, or I didn't realize how big sprinkles were. And also, I might be using some incorrect math. In my first video, I counted 1,000 sprinkles, and then I weighed them, which was probably fine for the 100,000, but now I'm using the same data to count to 1,000,000. So I thought, I'll just get twice as much as I did last time, and hopefully that should be good. So I have my 42 pounds of sprinkles here, but just in case we still don't have enough, here's the infinity sprinkle. Another one.
Another one. Another one. Man, I can't believe these are all of them. Psych! Do it. Woo! Right. And then we just got a little bit more right here. Is this a million sprinkles? Probably. Just sprinkle some on. Let's get some on this cake to eat. Oh, I only grabbed frosting. I felt it. Ah, yeah.
Oh. If you're subscribed, one of these is you. One of them. Right? Oh. I feel great. That's a shame we had to waste a perfectly good cake.
Good riddance. Oh, he's back. Welcome back, dude. Whoop, we got another one.
Man! This is a lot of people! I think this is the first subscriber special where I actually have that much in sprinkles.
Look, some of you are on me. Hello, boys.
Delicious.
There goes my feet again.
Oh, this is on my foot. Thanks for subscribing. Oh, this trampoline is probably ruined.
So now I'm going to talk about how I started out on YouTube. It's going to get maybe a little serious. My journey as a YouTuber did not start out on YouTube. I used to post my comics on Tumblr first. And before that, I used to draw comics in school. And actually, I still have every single one of them. Now, a lot of these weren't that funny.
Mrs. Johnson, I have some horrible news.
What?
It's about your son.
Is he doing drugs?
He
joined a gang? Robbed a bank? He listens to Nicki Minaj. The horror!
Okay, that one was a little funny.
Hi, my name is Kevin. It happened to me when I was in the car. I was driving and before I knew it happened. I felt violated, like I was cheated of my life. It was horrible. Let it all out.
And then you see that he was in a Nicki Minaj support group. I did not like Nicki Minaj growing up, apparently. But for some reason, I still drew them. A lot.
It was in 2009, so I was 13 years old when I started drawing these. And I kept drawing them until I was 16 years old. And at that time, I wanted to take my comics onto the next level. I wanted to put them on the internet. That's another thing about me. I wasn't an art kid growing up. You see all these talented artists saying, oh, when I was a little kid, I just couldn't be separated from my pen and paper. Not me. But I think that just goes to show you that if you work hard at something, then you can be good at anything. So I got a tablet for my 16th birthday. It was a Bamboo Create. It was about $100. And after messing around for about a month, I posted my very first comic. And I hated it. But I've seen some people defend it, so... Starting on Tumblr was a slow process. It wasn't until my fourth comic that I got one follower that wasn't my friend.
It was a porn blog.
But I used to pour hours into these comics, and it sucked seeing my hard work not get any attention. And I haven't really told anyone this, but it was around December of 2012 that I wanted to quit. I was upset no one was looking at my comics. I was upset my comics were looking really bad. If you look at my Tumblr for that month, I made 4 posts. 3 of them were me experimenting with my art because I just wanted to make it look good. And the one comic I made for that month, I had to force myself to finish it. And for the description I wrote, it's been a long and busy week. And I wish I could tell you what motivated me to keep going, but I don't remember. For some reason, I just didn't quit, and man am I glad I didn't! Can you imagine if I did quit?
I'd probably still be in college.
But I kept at it, I kept drawing and growing my audience slowly, and I had around 100 followers. But then one day when I posted this comic, for whatever reason, it just exploded. And I broke 1,000 followers. I remember logging in and just seeing the numbers just spike up. And I remember being so surprised, I was like literally like thrown back in my chair. Then a few comics later, this one blew up. And from then, I just kept steadily growing. So I used to watch YouTube and Captain Sparkles all the time when I was drawing my comics. But then one day I was like, I want to do that. So then in August of 2014, so 2 years of making comics on the internet, I posted my first video. And I hate it. I already had around 50,000 followers on Tumblr, so when I posted the video, like, my subscriber count immediately jumped to like 2,000, so that was nice. And then another 2 years went by, I got retweeted by Dwayne, and now we're here with a million. Another thing that I haven't mentioned in a video yet, I got this a month ago. It's a little late.
So maybe we can just add another zero right there and put a comma right here.
Yeah.
Don't worry, it comes off.
And if you want this amazing t-shirt made by an amazing person, you're going to have to go on to Tony's website. Link in the description now that I... because.
Also, I just wanted to show you the wall of fan art. So, you know, if your fan art didn't get featured in a video, then maybe got featured in this board thing. Also, here's just something fun that I think you want to see. So this is where I would record audio. Just right here. I would sit down here, and there would be a microphone if it wasn't over there. So, yeah, that's it.
Social interaction life hack I've discovered. If you're meeting someone new and you want to get to know them better, and you see any semblance of a tattoo peeking out of their sleeve, compliment it. If that person doesn't want to talk about their tattoos, they'll say, "Oh, thank you. Anyway, this is my stop." But if they do want to talk about their tattoos, their face will light up and then they'll do the rest of the talking. I realize that by giving you this advice, now anytime I compliment someone else's tattoos, it will seem disingenuous, but it's not, most of the time. I love all of your tattoos. That's right, I'm talking to you. I love your tattoos, dude. Whether it's how you got the tattoo, the meaning behind the tattoo, or being a tattoo of something you like, every tattoo is a story, and most people love telling stories about themselves. I wouldn't know anything about that, personally. I never understood why some people liked talking about their tattoos until I got one of my own. What, you think I'm gonna make a whole video about tattoos when I didn't even have any? That's right, I'm a marked man, Mom. What are you gonna do about it? Stop unconditionally loving me? Yeah, right. Wait, what are you doing with that cheese grater? Okay, but in all seriousness, can you make sure Grandma doesn't see this video, Mom? I don't want to upset her on the way out. Back in the day, tattoos used to be a symbol of rebellion and meant you couldn't get a job. No regrets, baby! But I feel like tattoos are getting more and more accepted, if not expected. I'll see a jacked, bald guy covered in tattoos and think, okay, yeah, he was meant to look like that. For me, the idea of being a badass tattooed guy with a sketch pad and a beanie and ripped jeans and a beaded bracelet always seemed cool to me. But like most people, when it came to tattoos, I had reservations. Ooh, this is gonna be on my body forever? What if I hate it? I had an idea once of getting these 5 Magic the Gathering symbols tattooed on my forearm. I even dotted them out in Sharpie once just to give them a test drive. But I ultimately decided not to get them because I was worried in 5 years I would go, oh, these? I was really into Magic the Gathering in my 20s. Not anymore, though, so now every morning I wake up with impending feelings of shame and remorse that I even decided to get this thing. And I didn't want that to happen, even though I've been playing Magic for over 15 years, and it means a lot to me, and I'm going to be buried with my Sliver deck, and... alright, maybe I should just get it. Even though people know that tattoos are permanent, there are still way more bad tattoos than there should be. One time, I saw this picture of someone's tattoo on a bad tattoo subreddit, and I thought it'd be funny to prank my family group chat by photoshopping that tattoo onto my arm. And then I thought it'd be funny to post that picture onto Instagram. I didn't think anyone would fall for this poor excuse of a Photoshop job, but then the internet and my family proved me wrong. Immediately, I started getting phone calls from my parents, and even my book agent rang me up and was like, "Did you actually get that tattoo?" "No, it's not a real tattoo." I mean, it is a real tattoo, but it's on someone else's body. That's their cross to bear. I can only imagine what that person's family and book agent went through. My parents were not supportive of me getting tattoos. But whose are, am I right? Some people, like my parents, say that your body is like a temple, and getting tattoos is like putting graffiti on it. Which, sure, okay, that's why I paid a professional graffiti artist to paint my temple exactly how I wanted. Also, you can't tell me not to deform my body when that's exactly what you did before I was even 24 hours old. Also, Jesus had piercings, and he loves showing them off to his buddies, so I think you'd be chill with a little tattoo. After much thought and deliberation, I finally settled on what my first tattoo would be. This was going to be permanently inked onto my body for the rest of my life. I got a tattoo in Courier New. Luckily, the artist was able to finish this in one session. It took quite a while, almost 5 whole minutes. Now let me explain why I got it. It was so that if anyone ever asked me, "Do you have any tattoos?" I could go, "Why, yes, I do," and then roll up my sleeve, and then I'd go, "Ha, ha, ha." When I showed off my tattoo on Jaden's Streamathon, there was one comment that said, "James having tattoo actually tattooed onto him is exactly the kind of tattoo I expected James to have." And that made me feel really good, because that meant the tattoo fit my vibe. And the second reason I got the tattoo was because I wanted to rebel. Since tattoos were frowned upon growing up, I wanted to have one just to have one. So I got a tattoo with no meaning whatsoever. Which, in a way, is the meaning. Even though the tattoo was small and usually covered up by my sleeve, I still felt anxious about getting it. And I continued to feel that way for about a week after I got it. It was a jump scare every time I saw it in the mirror, and I would look at it closely and go, "Yep, that's really in there. I sure hope I don't regret this." But then, after some time, the tattoo just became a part of me. Like, I didn't look in the mirror and go, "Yep, there's James and tattoo." I would go, "Yep, there's James. Full stop." And from that day on, I loved giving people advice on tattoos. As a marked man myself, I think you should absolutely get that Shadow the Hedgehog full back piece. YOLO, remember? What? You're worried that it's going to look bad when you're 70? Yeah, it's going to look bad when you're 70. You're 70. Don't think about how bad it's going to look. Think about how much you're going to enjoy it from now to when you're 69. I've known people my age who still hide their tattoos from their parents, but like the honest prodigal son that I am, I wasn't going to be doing that. But the next time I visited my parents, I walked into their house, and the very first thing my mom said to me was, "Do you have any tattoos?" She beat me to the punch. What? Why would you ask that? "Because last night, I had a dream that you came home and were covered in tattoos. So, which one of you incepted my mom?" "God?" I said, "Are all tattoos bad?" "Yes, all of them are bad. Even this one?" And I rolled up my sleeve and revealed my massive tat. And her reaction was, "Ah. Oh. Well, it's not the worst word to have permanently inked on your body." Later on, she said, "If you go to a Star Wars party, you could change it to Tatooine." So, I think she took it pretty goodly. Now, some of you might be thinking that my epic sleeve of a tattoo isn't that big a deal. It's tiny and can only be seen if I'm swimming or boxing or wearing a tank top. But you see, after getting tattooed, I experienced what people in the tattooing business call catching the bug. After seeing how much I liked my first tattoo and knowing that I could handle having a tattoo, I was ready to get something badass. I set up a big boy tattoo appointment with an artist I liked, and when I was in the tattoo shop, the artist asked, "Is this your first tattoo?" "Is this my first tattoo?" No, sweetheart. I think I know a thing or two about tattoos. So, without further ado, I would like to debut this out of the blue tattoo. You know, from the Dark Crystal, the Jim Henson 80s puppet movie that I did a video on it years ago.
Now I have the best character permanently inked onto my skin forever and ever. That movie will always hold a special place in my heart, and now it'll hold a special place under my skin. And now, whenever I show someone The Chamberlain, we end up talking about The Dark Crystal, which is great, because that's what I wanted to talk about anyways. I think I just discovered an autistic conversational cheat code. When I was getting it done, the artist asked me if there were any other tattoos that I wanted to get, and I said, why, yes I do. I wanted to get the computer from Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared, because I also love that series, and because I'm a computery guy. And I didn't realize until as I was explaining it to the artist that both of these characters are puppets. So, I don't know what that says about my psyche. I never thought that I liked puppets that much, but if anyone wants to psychoanalyze me in the comments, that'd be great. And speaking of YouTube comments, I know a lot of people are going to bring this up, so I'm just going to address it right now. You probably noticed that Chamberlain isn't holding his iconic triangle scepter. Yeah, I already know that. That's because he's holding the Emperor's scepter. It's like my own little headcanon. He got to be the Emperor because he's cool and awesome and... Come on, Dark Crystal fans. You think I don't know my lore? I didn't get the wrong scepter or anything. You think I'd get something wrong about the Dark Crystal? Okay, you want to know what happened? I own a Chamberlain statue because, of course, I do. And I took pictures of it to send as a reference image to the artist. And I totally forgot that I accidentally broke off his triangle scepter. And now, because of that, he's holding an entirely different scepter on the tattoo. But you know what? I don't care. This one's better. It's a more clear silhouette. Now, this time when I went to show my parents the tattoo, I don't know exactly what I was hoping for, but I wanted to see some dramatic pearl clutching. You know, just some real disappointment. Chamberlain had to be split up into two sessions, and I only got one done when I went to Arizona for a wedding. I saw my mom, and she didn't immediately ask me if I had any more tattoos. God didn't tattle on me this time. I told her, Mom, I gotta tell you something, privately. What is it? I need you to keep a secret from Grandma. Okay. I'm serious. Grandma can't find out about this. Okay. Look, it's Chamberlain. And I showed her the unfinished tattoo, and she went, oh, do you even like the Dark Crystal that much? I mean, yeah, the plot's kind of mid, but it's a cool world. Why were you more upset about my fake Baby Yoda tattoo than my real Dark Crystal tattoo? She didn't care, and neither did my dad. And you know what? I actually showed my grandma too, and she liked it. I can't make these people mad, no matter what I do. One of my cousins is a tattoo artist, and I was talking to him about tattoos, and my mom said, oh, you should get your cousin to finish it. And even he said, do not do that. Speaking of tattoo advice, if you're thinking about getting a tattoo, I think you should wait. Obviously, it's your body, your choice, but with the minimum age of tattoos being 18, and in some states 16 with parents' permission, I just can't imagine being happy with any tattoos 16-year-old James could think of. All I'm saying is that I'm glad I waited and gave myself time to really know if this is what I wanted. And it was. I know you're young and you want to look as hardcore as possible, but you can still get a tattoo when you're like 23 and it'll look good. Trust me. No matter what tattoo you get, it's a way to express outwardly to the world what you like, what you want to remember, and who you are. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm about to get a full back piece of my grandma's face. There's literally no way my family wouldn't love that. Thank you all for watching this YouTube video, and now that you're all done, I'm excited to announce that I have a Funko Pop of me! If that's something you're interested in, then you can head on over to my website and you can get a signed Funko while supplies last. As always, thank you to my amazing team, and the next time I'll see you, I might have more tattoos, who knows. I understand that there are things that I don't understand. For example, theoretical physics, or how to make friends. But I do know that the world is not flat, that vaccines work, and listening to people tell me otherwise is admittedly a guilty pleasure of mine. Whether it's conspiracy theories or horoscopes, I love watching people pour their heart into something they genuinely believe in, only for me to go, I disagree. But please, continue. There are some beliefs that I don't agree with, but are absolutely fine to believe in, like thinking bucket hats look good on someone. But I think we can all agree that some beliefs can be incredibly damaging to a person, or even humanity as a whole, like the anti-vaxxers.
or racists. So I discovered a new trend, and I'm not sure if it's just kids being kids or a mentally damaging belief system, but I'm still gonna talk about it and explain to my audience the importance of critical thinking and to notice the red flags and dangerous beliefs. So, what am I talking about? I unfortunately fell down a rabbit hole and discovered a community of mostly kids on a phone application called TikTok doing something called reality shifting. This, by the way, is not a small community of like 20 people. There are amino groups with thousands of members, videos with hundreds of thousands of views, and they have their own acronyms. OMG. Reality shifting stems from the belief in parallel universes, which, I gotta be honest, I'm not completely sold on that idea to begin with. You say that Schrodinger's cat is both alive and dead, but cats have 9 lives, so are 4.5 cats dead? How is a cat half dead? Either way, someone supposedly very smart has said that every decision you've ever made has caused the universe to copy itself and create a new reality where you made the different decision. I had cereal for breakfast this morning, but somewhere there's a reality where I ate my hamster for breakfast. Does that mean I create a new universe every time I scratch my butt, and somewhere there's a James with better manners? So times that by 8 billion people making decisions every day, plus the decisions made by, like, dogs and jellyfish, right? Those count, I think. And we get roughly infinity total realities. If you've seen Endgame, you know what I'm talking about. The reality shifting community says that since there are infinite realities, then there's a reality where GameStop stock is incredibly low, or that COVID didn't happen. Or perhaps there's even a reality out there where Hogwarts is real, and a messenger owl just dropped off your acceptance letter. And through the right meditation, you can transfer your consciousness from your current reality, your CR for short, to your Hogwarts desired reality, your DR. And for some gosh darn reason, Hogwarts is the number one shiftable destination location. But obviously, it's not just Hogwarts. Any fictional universe is fair game. You could go to the Hunger Games or Lord of the Rings. I'm not sure why, though. A lot of bad things happen there. And since all logic is thrown out the window, cartoon and anime realities are shiftable destinations. Because if Schrodinger's cat taught us anything, it's that there are some universes that are just 24 drawings a second. So because there are allegedly infinite realities, people will write down what they want their desired reality to be, and this is called a script. It's funny, you know, normally scripts are made to tell fictional stories, but these people think that what they write down will be 100% real. And you can make a script of whatever you want. You can say, I want to shift to Hogwarts and be in a relationship with Draco Malfoy. I mean, not me, this is just an example. Now listen, you're a smart kid, okay? Hopefully, I don't have to explain to you that that's not how life works. If you believe you can hop into different realities, then that's great and I see no problem with it. Is what I would say in a different reality, but in this reality, I have a lot of questions. If you can shift your consciousness into a different version of you, what happens to the alternate reality you's consciousness? You're just taking over someone else's body. This other you had a life and a family, unless you're going to a YA fantasy novel, and you just took over their whole body. What if there's a you in an alternate reality that's like, I want to live in a reality where there's a pandemic and I'm sadder. And then they shifted here. What happens to your consciousness? You don't trade. The reality shifting community says that when you shift, you leave behind a clone of yourself. Obviously. So when you shift, there's someone's consciousness unaccounted for. What about the realities where one of you had waffles for breakfast and the other had pancakes? Both of these yous are pretty much the exact same. So then both of you will want to reality shift to the exact same Harry Potter reality. Do you have to share a body with the other yous that have shifted to the same reality? Are you telling me that Voldemort and any fictional villain is real? How come half of us didn't get turned to dust when Thanos snapped? If anyone can reality shift, are you telling me there's a chance that Voldemort could download TikTok and reality shift here? If you go to Hogwarts, you're leading Voldemort right to us. How can there be a reality where magic is real? Sure, I don't know how parallel universes work, but they're parallel, so the laws of physics should still be the same, right?
But James, I know that reality shifting makes no sense and is impossible, but then why do so many people claim to have shifted?
Because they're dreaming. Shifting happens when you fall asleep, and if you fill your subconscious with things from your desired reality, would you be surprised that you had a dream about Hogwarts? Something about this trend doesn't sit right with me. A lot of the reality-shifting TikToks were done by kids. And kids, as you know, can get really obsessed in a fandom and do some cringy stuff. If these kids were making fanfiction and writing themselves on a date with Bakugo, that would be totally fine. Healthy, even. Heck, even if these kids flat out said, "I love Harry Potter so much that I want to manipulate my dreams to be about him," that would be fine too! But something about actually believing that you're astral projecting into a fictional universe? I don't know, that level of obsession just feels unhealthy, my guy. And also, back off Bakugo, he's mine. The problem with reality shifting and actually conspiracy theories as a whole is that they pretend to be based on factual evidence when they're entirely a pseudoscience. You start off with a scientific idea, multiple realities, and then you make up whatever you want and use what the scientists have said about multiple realities as proof. Even though no scientist has said anything about being able to move your consciousness outside of your body, or that you leave a clone of yourself behind when you reality shift, or that cartoon universes exist. I've seen people in videos say that they've done research on reality shifting, but I feel confident in saying you didn't get a degree in quantum physics. I want you to cite your sources and show me the studies, because research isn't just believing what other people said on TikTok. These TikToks get impressionable kids to believe in reality shifting in pretty manipulative ways, saying that if you didn't shift, it's because you didn't believe hard enough. When you get these doubts and say, "Oh, I can't shift, I don't even know if it's real anymore at this point," try and ask yourself after, "But what if it's real? What if I can shift? You want to find out, do you?" I get it. Harry Potter is a cool world. That's why they made a whole theme park about it. Who wouldn't want to drop out of a Muggle public school and live in a castle with a bunch of soft British boys? And also magic or whatever. But you need to be mindful about where you're getting your information. I've watched hours of flat earthers and anti-vaxxers talk about their beliefs, and these people get their information from non-credible sources, and they end up pushing more fake information online, and it creates this echo chamber that warps their worldview. I don't want kids watching these TikToks or going on Amino and essentially get lied to and think this is how the world works. I'm hoping that all of these people will look back at themselves in 10 years and go, "Yeesh, I can't believe I was so obsessed about a thing, I literally tried to astral project myself across the multiverse. Right, Bakugo?" I know that this reality can suck sometimes, and right now it's looking pretty bad. But like it or not, this is the one reality we get. A lot of things may be out of your control, but according to theoretical physics, we make a lot of choices. And all our choices lead us down different paths. So what you need to do is not give up on this reality for a literal fictitious one, but instead to make choices that will make this current reality your desired reality. Thank you all for coming to my TED Talk.
You should gamble. That's right, I said it. You all should gamble so you learn firsthand how stupid gambling is. Here's the stitch with gambling, okay? Gambling is only fun if you don't understand math. Humans have been gambling since the dawn of whenever money was invented. I mean, just take one look at the Las Vegas Strip and you will immediately understand how lucrative the gambling industry is. They built the Statue of Liberty, the Eiffel Tower, and Caesar's Palace all on the same street. Gambling is everywhere in Las Vegas. As soon as you step off the plane, you're bombarded with slot machines in the airport. Are you kidding me? You can't wait to gamble? As soon as you step off the airplane, you just immediately go, "Gotta win big!" Look, I understand why people gamble. I get it. I play Magic the Gathering, and opening up a booster pack and not getting any expensive cards is the exact same feeling as losing your entire life savings. The first time I gambled, I was in Australia for VidCon. After the convention, me and a bunch of mates went to a bar, and I found out that there was a casino attached to it. And I thought, perfect! I'm in a different country, so my parents will never find out that I gambled! Plus, I'm of legal age and independent. Let's get our gambling freak on! I was only comfortable asking my friend Moz to borrow some cash, because I feel like if a friend asks, "Hey, can I borrow some money to gamble with?" you're never going to see that money or that friend ever again. All Moz had was a fiver, which is Australian for $5. So I only got one chip to gamble with, and I decided to spend that one chip on roulette, because that's the only game I knew how to play.
I know how to play blackjack, but I know there's a mathematical algorithm for the best, most perfect way to play, so I don't know how to play blackjack, you know? And poker is too intimidating. I can't deal with people hyperanalyzing my facial expressions to see if I'm bluffing. I already know I'm a bad liar. And the last time I actually played poker was with Luigi on my DS. Here's some honest strategy for the game roulette, okay? Sometimes a roulette table will have a TV screen that gives you stats for hot numbers at the table. Like it'll say, Red 23's been popping. It's been hit 14 times today. Ignore those statistics. Every square at a roulette table has an equal chance of hitting regardless of whatever the previous numbers were. Just ignore those stats and always bet odd. So, with just one chip to my name, I was able to turn that single chip into 200 Australian dollary dues. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm feeling it. Oh, the gambler's high. Oh, I'm not sure about your investments, but a 4,000% profit is very good. I could have kept going, but I really wanted to rub my winnings into Maz's face. I cashed out my chips, went back to the bar, and then slammed the two hundos on the table and said something cocky like, how about them cheeky buggers, mate? And Maz was like, did you just win those 200 wibbly wobbly dollary dues? Yeah, and it's all mine. And Maz went, hey, you still owe me 200 Australian dollars for that other thing I did for you. Oh, yeah, I guess I do owe you that. Then he scooped up my two Australian hundos that I was just rubbing in his face. It's an anomaly that my very first casino experience was so positive. It was like the devil himself was tempting me to continue gambling. See? Gambling lets you pay off your debts. Never stop. That, or I'm just really good at Australian roulette. This is probably how people get addicted to gambling, huh? Casinos are designed to make you stay in them for as long as possible. There's no clocks or windows, so you can't see how late it's getting. Chips are used, so it doesn't feel like you're spending money. And there's supposedly free alcohol, but I guess they run out whenever I show up. But even knowing all the ways casinos manipulate you, it's kind of fun just being inside a casino. All the lights, the old ladies at the slot machines smoking away their already decaying lungs, the people crying in the bathroom because they have a gambling addiction. It's great. Hey, buddy, don't worry. You're going to win next time. I'm sure of it. To counter the life-ending stressors, though, people will give the advice, if you're going to gamble, have a set budget and just assume you're going to lose it all. But I couldn't even do that. Not the sticking to a budget part. I couldn't bring myself to gamble away my allotted budget. When I went to Vegas, I told myself I was only going to gamble $300. But after I lost $200, I thought to myself, yeah, I don't think this is a good investment anymore. One time I was on a slot machine and I got the five buffaloes in a row or whatever, and I got the chance to win a jackpot. There was a mini game on the slot machine where I had to flip over tiles that had either bronze, silver, or golden apples. And if I flipped over three golden apples, I'd win the golden jackpot. And if I flipped over three silver apples, I'd get the silver jackpot, and bronze apples gave the bronze jackpot, which was the lowest jackpot. The gold jackpot was $5,000. So I flip over the first tile, and it's a golden apple. And I think, then I flip over another tile, and it's another golden apple. And that's when I got the feeling. Oh, my God. I might actually win $5,000. Then I flip over three bronze apples in a row, winning the lowest jackpot. I don't even remember how much it was because I spent it all on the very same slot machine. And I immediately knew what happened. The game was dangling that golden jackpot right in front of my face, making me think I was one golden apple away from making it big, even making me pick which tile to flip over so it would make me feel more in control, when the whole time the computer could just change what was on the tile that I flip over because it's a computer. It can cheat. It's Schrodinger's jackpot.
And before you think I just got really bad luck, that very day I was walking through the casino and I saw a guy playing on the same slot machine and he got to the same jackpot minigame. And I stopped to watch him and the exact same thing happened. He flipped over 2 golden apples and then 3 bronze ones. I don't know what the statistics are of that happening twice, but it's mighty coincidental. Why are we still gambling if the majority of people who gamble lose all their money? Because it's fun. It's a stupid way to spend your money, absolutely. But the rush, man. In Australia, there were multiple times where I could have lost all my money, and statistically I should have. But whenever an odd number was hit, I couldn't help but throw my hands in the air and celebrate. I was hugging the dealer over winning $20. However, no matter how many times you win the jackpot, if you spend enough time in a casino, you will always lose. Ever hear the phrase, "the house always wins"? That's because they have the mathematical advantage and computers who cheat. Gambling is not an investment. It's not a way to pay off your debts. It is entertainment. If done responsibly and in a social setting, gambling is absolutely fine to indulge in. And if you get upset that you lost all your money, what did you think was going to happen? I like to think that my videos, for the most part, have greatly improved in quality from the past year. Let's watch a clip of my first video. Roll the clip.
So you know those books you make in elementary school that you write as a class and some publishing company makes them into a real book?
So you know those books you make in elementary school?
Man, I don't think I could sound less insecure. And I was 18 when I made that video. I was legally old enough to get married. So I'm always trying to improve the quality of my videos. I've gotten a better microphone, I've learned to level out my audio, I like to think my drawings are more lively and move more, but sometimes when I record, I tend to smack my lips. And I always thought it was because my mouth was dry. So then I would chug an entire water bottle, but I would still sometimes have smacky lips. So I thought, is it possible I could be drinking too much water? Is that even a thing? Maybe I should drink Gatorade. So no big deal, right? First I Google how to stop lip smacking. And since I couldn't find anything that had pictures...
How can you read this? There's no pictures.
I decided to ask YouTube instead. I don't know, maybe someone out there makes voice acting tutorials. But instead, I stumbled upon something indescribable.
So, tonight is the return of the beloved lip smacking.
So there was this about 14-year-old girl just getting
real close to the microphone and smacking her lips.
And apparently there's a lot higher demand for people who smack their lips than people who don't. Jeez, I don't even know why I tried to fix that problem. But you're probably thinking, James, this is just one video, right? This is just one person making a YouTube video, right? There's not like an entire community dedicated to...
Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response, ASMR. This is the entire Wikipedia page printed out with notes. You know, I bet at least some people watching this already know what it is. And you didn't tell me about it. What, you think I wasn't going to find out?
And my college charges 5 cents to print a page. So I spent 65 cents printing out this Wikipedia article. Money I'm never getting back. So what is ASMR? Basically, it's a video of someone whispering into a microphone and making certain sounds. For about 20 to 60 minutes. Now you might be thinking, why? Why do they do this? The Wikipedia article says that the purpose of ASMR is to give listeners sort of a tingly sensation in the head, and some people describe it as akin to a mild electric current. The best way I can think to describe it is, you know those Bob Ross videos? Remember how you just loved to watch them even though you couldn't paint? Why did you watch them? Yeah, you watched him because you loved his soft, gentle voice, and the sounds of the paintbrush on the canvas. And then when he beat his paintbrush on that little thing, you can beat me, Bobby. I think that's what ASMR is trying to create. It's basically supposed to give you the same feeling when you watch a Bob Ross video.
Man, you're watching those videos a lot differently than me.
Now, since I read the Wikipedia page, let me tell you some useless facts about it. The first case of ASMR was in a book written in 1925 that said, "With a roughness in her voice like a grasshopper, which rasped his spine deliciously and sent running up into his brain waves of sound." The frick? In this part about evolutionary history, David Hurin states that the ASMR effect is clearly strongly related to the perception of non-threat and altruistic. Faith, what is this word? Altruistic?
Altruistic.
Altruistic.
No, altruistic.
altruistic.
The ASMR effect is clearly strongly related to the perception of non-threat and altruistic attention, and has strong similarities to physical grooming in primates, who derive enormous pleasure, borderlining on euphoria, when being groomed by a grooming partner, not to get clean, but rather to bond with each other. So that begs the question, do dogs like it?
Is there a time of the beloved lip-smacking?
ASMR was officially created in 2008, but it didn't get popular until a Facebook group, along with a subreddit, was created in 2010. Now, it wasn't always called ASMR. Instead, people used phrases like brain massage, head tingle, brain tingle, spine tingle, and my personal favorite, attention-induced head orgasm. What are you doing with those grasshoppers, ma'am? But a lot of people didn't want to use orgasm in the name, because then people would think that this ASMR stuff is pretty sexual, which it totally isn't, you guys, except in 2015 when people started making a new genre of ASMR videos called ASMR Otica. And something else that's worth noting on the Wikipedia page, the popularity of ASMR videos featuring women does substantially exceed those created by male performers. However, there are some popular male ASMRists, and not all video creators are heterosexual. So can I not make ASMR videos? Is that what it's saying? So the creator of the Facebook group back in 2010 coined the term autonomous sensory meridian response. Autonomous meaning that it's spontaneous, sensory meaning the senses or sensation, and meridian meaning orgasm. I'm not making that up. Now, the word meridian doesn't mean orgasm at all. But in the Wikipedia article, it says, Alan chose the word meridian, mistakenly believing that it was a kinder way of saying orgasmic. And look, it's even on our blog. So you're telling me this whole time, people have been using ASMR to mean climax, and that's not even what it means. Okay, some other things in the Wikipedia article I want to talk about is that apparently not everyone experiences ASMR. There's also a type of ASMR called binaural recording, where performers use two microphones and place them where your ears would be. So it's extra creepy. Another popular... Look, I'm lip-smacking right now. Another popular theme is that these videos do a lot of role-playing, specifically clinical role-playing. Now, I'm someone who never really got into the whole role-playing experience, except when Captain Sparkles does it. Come on, where's part five? Let's read the wiki! The ASMRists provide clinical or medical services, including routine general medical examinations. The creator of these videos make no claim to the reality of what is depicted, and the viewer is intended to be aware that they are watching and listening to a simulation, performed by an actor. Yeah, I don't think we can really use the word actor, Wikipedia. Okay, what else? There's little scientific work done on it. Some people say that it's great for fighting insomnia and anxiety, but others say, no, it's not. But I mean, it's not like it's bad for you. And there has been one song made to trigger ASMR, but I listened to it. I don't think song is the best word for it. It's more just normal ASMR audio. Just because it was released on an album doesn't make it a song, Wikipedia. And there's one comment on this video that I think sums up ASMR pretty well. I'm extremely uncomfortable. I had no idea that ASMR was even a thing. Did you know it was a thing? I didn't. Heck, even College Humor made a parody ASMR video. I just want to make things clear. I'm not hating on people who make ASMR videos or even people who like to watch it. And I'm certainly not jealous that some of these people have hundreds of thousands of subscribers and millions of views and all they're doing is just brushing a microphone for 20 minutes. But guys, I think this ASMR thing is getting a little out of hand. Keep in mind that all these videos are about 15 minutes to an hour long. We have this girl with a southern accent singing I'm Blue and Numa Numa to remove a curse from you.
Numa Numa Numa, yay, I'm blue, dubba ding dubba da.
Inaudible whispering and tongue clicking, a couple of dentist role plays, a library book return role play, eating Chinese food, a couple of Yu-Gi-Oh card readings, a Minecraft let's play, a Five Nights at Freddy's tribute, Undertale, a Mario Maker let's play, Evening with the Vampire, the Joker, Satan, alien abduction for men, and torture role play. Really? You could type ASMR and then type anything after that and you'll get something.
You think God stays in heaven because he too lives in fear of what he's created?
And what's doubly weird is that all of these videos are recent. Like, they were made in 2015 or even 2016. Well, obviously Undertale and Mario Maker are recent. But Shrek? Shrek?
Shrek.
But just to finish things up, I just want to get something off my chest. This Undertale ASMR was pretty good, compared to the other ones. You still might be thinking, yeah, it's pretty weird, James. Yeah, it is pretty weird. We've gotten pretty deep in the weirdness with those alien ones, and they have almost 1 million views. I just think this one deserves more views. You know, I just want one ASMR video to be like 40 minutes long, and then in the middle somewhere, the person just screams. Like, really hardcore screams. Yeah.
James!
Hey, Dad, I kind of have a weird request.
Okay.
Can you film the dogs with headphones in them and then send me the video?
You mean dogs wearing earbuds?
Yeah. Make sure to film it horizontally.
I don't think they won't keep earbuds in their ears.
I have never played Fortnite, but we're going to be playing a lot of it today, so buckle up. If I am going to get cracked, then I should probably download the game. Wait, what's an epic launcher? I just want to play Fortnite. Luckily, this endeavor won't break the bank because Fortnite is a free game. Really? I get to experience all of this for free? Today, we're going to be playing 100 games of Fortnite to see if we can actually improve, develop a skill, and try and earn that elusive victory royale. I mean, we're not playing Fortnite, I'm playing Fortnite, you're watching a YouTube video. Now, before we get into any games, let's first... Alright, I'm just gonna go with my standard username, no big deal, and... Oh. Okay, yeah, that one's probably on me. The game's been out for 7 years, so I hope whoever has that account has been earning me a lot of dubs and make me look good. Okay, I guess we should keep a low profile. We don't want to get stream sniped, you know? So after hours of brainstorming, I settled on the name GatorGuy333, because I'm the GatorGuy333. There are two popular modes to play Fortnite. There's the classic Battle Royale mode with all the features and doodads that made the game as popular as it is, like doing this. And then there's Zero Build, where there's none of that shit. Now, which mode is the more competitive mode? Whichever mode I'm playing. For my very first game, I decided to play the classic Battle Royale mode, baby. We're playing Fortnite like how God intended. Builds on, ranked off, skin default. What, you think I'm gonna buy a skin? You think I'm gonna spend money on a free game? Pfft, get out of here. Oh my God, is that Peter Griffin? All right, enough talk. Let's start. I would like to remind you that I'm playing Fortnite for the very first time.
Who's shooting me? Oh, God.
I didn't have a friend on call to tell me what buttons to press or give me emotional support. Like, no one told me, hey, don't drop that mythic gun for shield blasters. Shield blasters aren't even that good. Also, my go-to video games are Mario Maker and Tetris. I'm not really a first-person kind of shooter. What do you mean it's technically a third-person shooter? Who are the other two people? Instead of doing all of these unnecessary side quests, right now, my one and only quest is to be the best and not rest until I conquest all the sweats.
Do I take fall damage in this game?
Don't worry, Past James. You'll find out soon enough. I landed in fencing fields, and the second my feet touched the ground, I started getting shot at. I went inside a building and started breaking random objects, hoping that there was a gun inside them.
This is horrible sound.
And I grabbed a rare Striker AR. The very first gun in my Fortnite career and it's already a rare? Let's go, dude. But then I found an uncommon shotgun just lying on the floor, and I had to pick which gun I was going to take to battle because my inventory was already full of priceless items. I decided to keep my rare gun because it had more bullets and because I like the color blue more than green, so.
Can I only hold one gun, or is it like my inventory is full? Who am I talking to? Oh! Ah! You stood no chance, bro. You stood no chance.
In that moment, I had gotten what I thought was my very first Fortnite kill. This, however, was not another player, but rather one of the many NPCs just wandering around the map. But I didn't know that at the time, so there was nothing but pure joy on my face. Almost immediately, I got a second Fortnite kill, and my suspicions that these were actually computer players were growing.
Is this a bot? Why can't I... They, like, didn't hurt me at all.
I started shooting what looked like a final boss, but had run out of bullets. Uh-oh. I ran away, narrowly dodging every shot being fired at me. I healed up,
found another gun, tried shooting the boss again, ran out of bullets again, and then I ran away again. Hey, that's two confrontations where I didn't die. Clearly, I'm a natural. I knew I had to get away from the danger, so I started building a ramp.
I'm like... We're building a staircase.
Oh, God! No! No, that's how it happened? That's how I went out? So, yes, there is fall damage in Fortnite. You know what? Build mode sucks. Build mode's what killed me. We're done doing that. We're doing no build from now on. Now, before we get into game two, I would like to briefly explain some of the fundamentals I learned from playing that I wish someone explained to me. Starting with the guns are going to be your main tool for killing. And every gun has a rarity assigned to it, ranging from common, uncommon, rare, epic, mythic, and legendary. Those last two might be switched. Actually, I never knew which adjective was better. But either way, orange and yellow guns are more rare than rare guns and more epic than epic ones. I'm sorry if you already know this, okay? This is just how I process things. Okay, I have to make a YouTube video about it. An uncommon sniper rifle could have the best scope in the game, while an epic one could have no scope at all. The epic sniper will do more damage and have a faster reload time, but if you can't hit anyone due to a lack of scope, which gun's actually better? Doesn't matter for me, I still couldn't hit anyone regardless. Also, this is an Overwatch 2. You have a limited amount of ammo, which in the early game is something you really have to be mindful of. I learned that my first day.
Am I out of... I'm out.
You'll just have to play the game to figure out which guns click with you, but my favorite guns are shotguns. And I have the data to back it up. The damage they do, as well as you not even needing good aim to do damage, make them a great choice for getting kills.
Fun! I'm having fun!
Unfortunately, you can't just go walking around with every shotgun you find. You only have 5 inventory slots that you have to use wisely. And you'll want to save at least 2 of those slots for a healing item and a specialty item. So really, you should only be going around with a maximum of 3 guns. But I'm not here to backseat game, alright? You can do whatever you want. It's a free game. Okay, enough explaining. Let's get back to match. I landed in fencing fields and immediately started getting shot at again. Not a super great start, I know.
How did you get a weapon so fast?
I found a gun, but with 3 other people shooting me, I decided my best option was to hide in a dumpster. Which turned out to be a terrible hiding spot because the boss lady found me in 5 seconds. And for the next 4 minutes, I grabbed any gun or grenade I could find and started using them on all the grunts shooting me. And I was slowly starting to pick them off.
What's up? What's up, guys? How's it going? How many kills is this? 1?
I was gaming so hard that I didn't even realize that this right here was my first actual Fortnite kill. XXX Dark Tonics XX. I'm sorry I had to do it to you, but you were the first player I ever eliminated. I hope knowing this fact makes you feel a sense of pride and accomplishment in me. My KD ratio is now perfectly balanced, so that's good. I took a moment to figure out the controls, and I started taking down some more players.
Let me see if I can, zoom in. Okay, I can crouch. Nope, that's... Oh, okay. Is there, a... Oh, if I hold... Oh, that's how I do it. What are you? Rare, and you have 30... Oh, wait, my other gun had 105 bullets.
With the boss eliminated, I opened a vault with a key card and found 2 epic guns and a rocket launcher. Also, on the way to the vault, I may or may not have dropped a mythic gun for some shield blasters. Thankfully, no one saw, so that would have been embarrassing.
Where's Tilted Towers? What was that?
A giant floating island appeared in the sky, and I decided to head up it.
See ya!
In the middle of the island, I started to capture a flag, and when I successfully captured it, I was rewarded with even more mythic guns that I didn't pick up for some reason. I'm sorry, rewatching this footage is just as painful for you as it is for me, okay?
Supersonic racing. Everybody was supersonic racing. Come on, load! Dude, I don't want to count any chickens or anything, but are we doing this?
I saw the storm closing in, and then I noticed.
Oh, there's only 2 people. It
It's me and one other guy.
And then this amazing clutch happened.
Okay, load, 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 load. Where'd she go? Where'd you go? Where'd you go? Where'd you go? Where is she? There she. What? What do I do now?
Well, that just happened. My second game ever, and I already got a dub? Ull you? Well, all of you astute, sweaty Fortnite players watching might have noticed that my final opponent kinda sucked ass. I mean, look at him. We're both in a completely open area, and this player can't even land a single hit on me. And they made it into the top two? That's because no matter how good you are at Fortnite, after every round, there's one winner and 99 losers. And if every player has an equal chance of winning, that would mean you're still losing 99% of the time. And if you were playing a video game where you lost 99% of the time, you would probably stop having fun and never play the game again. Or not, I don't know, I've never played Dark Souls. So what Epic Games does to remedy this is they fill up every match with bots who kind of suck shit. This way, you can get some easy kills on other players and make it further into every game. At least you got 3 kills in 20th place, right? That doesn't feel as bad as getting 99th. However, the unintended consequence of this is that now, after every kill you get, there's a little thought in the back of your head thinking, did I actually kill someone with a soul, or is Fortnite going easy on me? So there's a pretty big chance that my first Fortnite kill, XXX Dark Tonic XXX, wasn't even a real person that could feel proud of me. Chances are, none of these other players are real.
Here are my opponents.
Eventually, we'll be at a high enough level where it'll start to feel like, you know, a challenge. We're just gonna keep trucking along. Let's start map.
No, 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 no. Okay. Oh, I'm out, I'm out. Cool. Hello? Hello?
Okay, I guess we'll chalk up those last two games to beginner's luck. Surely things will go differently in Matt.
A cabbage and a coconut. Cool. Let me just bite into that. And shotgun and shotgun and shotgun. Made me waste all my ammo, dude. Okay, anyone at all? Hello? Too easy! Too-
Technically speaking, no one has killed me yet. At least in match 2, I was the one who eliminated the last player, but matches 3 and 4 just handed me a crown on a fluffy pillow. You know, I wanted to do this really cool thing where we looked at spreadsheets and tracked my progress, but all the data's gonna get kinda messed up if I just keep winning all the time. Why learn the game or develop a strategy if everything I'm doing results in a win? It's upsetting that I'm already perfect. I hope this is still a good idea for a video. We still have a whole lot more Fortnite to get through, so let's just see if we can stumble and fumble our way into even more victory.
Ah! Ah! Oh, this is what loss feels like.
I think those 3 wins in a row made me a little cocky. I mean, no one has been able to stop me, so I wasn't trying anything special. When I saw another player, I would just do my normal strategy of standing still and shooting, and it got me 15th place. But this does prove that I can be stopped. Finally, we've faced a worthy opponent. Sheeny Shear. F*** you, Sheeny Shear. Oh well, I guess we couldn't win them all. I mean, I still have more wins than losses at this point. As long as the next 50 games go well, then I won't be complaining.
I was looking at the map, bro.
How do I thank the bus driver? I would love to thank them, but I unfortunately do not know the button to thank them.
Gee!
I don't know what this is, but I'm afraid to use it.
I don't know what that does! I don't know what that does! Whoa, 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 whoa. No. Oh boy. Oh no. Oh, I get down. Ooh. Oh, oh. Please don't, please don't. Oh. One of these days we're gonna learn how to thank the bus driver.
$99.
Oh, you're not f***ing around?
Well, me neither.
I don't know what I'm doing, you guys. Wish I knew how to thank the bus driver. The guy. Oh! What is this? Medallion. Cool. I want you.
Floof, right?
Look at the camera, Floof.
Camera's right there, Floof. What just happened?
I was in the middle of a grind.
How come when I shoot people, it takes like 4 or 5 hits? I'm starting to get in heated gamer moments. Am I just bad at the game? Oh, I am bad at the game. Whoa! Whoa! What is this? How do I get you here? You got me.
Cool.
B? Oh! It's B! That was bad. That was bad. That was bad.
This match I started doing pretty well in.
We can't keep doing this. We can't.
I landed in Pleasant Plaza and got 3 kills without taking any damage.
We got the jump on him.
I started getting even more kills and was picking up some pretty good loot. I even picked up these 3 medallions, not knowing what they did. And before I knew it, there was only me and 1 person left.
There's only 1 person left?
This hadn't happened since those first 3 games, which I frankly didn't deserve to win.
Where are you?
I was upset, yes, but I can accept when I've been outplayed.
How did that happen?
In this match, I got my first and only kill with a cluster clinger right at the very start. Overall, I was able to get 9 kills this match. There were a lot of close calls in this game, but I was always able to find health packs and heal back up. As long as I stayed in the storm circle, I was going to let the other players come to me. And my patience paid off because once again, I ended up in the top 2 and I started to get nervous.
Oh, fiddlesticks. No, 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 no.
I made some dumb mistakes. Like once again, not picking up those legendary guns that were on the ground. What? I only got 3 kills this match, but I made it to the top 3 with a legendary run-and-pump shotgun. If you've played Fortnite, you know this is the most superior shotgun out of all the shotguns. I saw the last 2 players fighting by the storm, and instead of waiting for them to kill each other, I sniped Banana Joe 934 from afar. I was in second place yet again, but this time I had the last player in my sights.
Where are you? Where are you? I know about that running over people trick.
No! Ooh. I want to talk about the top 2 jitters. Dude, I can't describe how anxiety-inducing it is being one of the last 2 players alive. You have narrowly survived every challenge and bot thrown at you for the last 20 minutes, and now the only thing that stands between you and a victory royale is the best player in the game. Getting into the top 2, I would literally be shaking and making mistakes that I couldn't afford to make. With so many close games, I decided to call it a night, and as my head rested on my pillow, I only had 1 question on my mind. How? By this point, Fortnite had started to slip into my subconscious. I was having dreams about Fortnite. One time I was lying in bed and I heard this sound. And I thought, there's someone nearby. I need to kill them. I pretty much got the gist of Fortnite. I had been to all the places on the map, I knew what every gun did, but I couldn't get over the second place hump.
I needed to elevate my Fortnite skills. I needed to consult the
Is anyone going to interrupt me? No?
Look, not getting outside help was never part of the challenge, okay? Is it fair that everyone else already knows the buttons when I didn't even know what button used the scope? How am I supposed to know that? No one ever told me you can pick up the business turret after it's been thrown. And I'll never be able to pick them up. Here is the official guide to Fortnite. It's full of useful information like telling me where Tilted Towers or Loot Lake is. Oh, here's something. Surviving the endgame. It says you need to prepare to improvise. To survive this phase of the game, you'll want to have a few structures you can build. Okay, maybe this won't be helpful. Ah, here we go. You can claim a victory royale without building a single structure in the game, but you'll need sharp reflexes and to be able to move deftly to pull it off. Okay, so skill issue is what the official guidebook says. I was kind of hoping for some, I don't know, useful strategies. Something like, here's a link to an aimbot. So I decided to ask a real human for some help, and my friend Rush told me, hey, did you know there's a setting you can turn on that lets you visually see what direction noises are coming from? What? So now, even if my ears can't actually hear footsteps, the game will tell me, hey, there's footsteps to your right. Someone is definitely nearby. Now, this setting is for hearing impaired people. So is me using this setting as an able-bodied hearing man cheating, kind of? Yeah, kind of. But I need every bit of help I can get. And I bet most of you play with this setting on, too, and you hear just fine. Now, let's see if we can apply this useful tool as we head into Oh, I have some bad news. I don't normally work with external hard drives, so I didn't realize these things were made out of eggshells. I was storing all of my footage on an external hard drive, and I guess I forgot to put it on its tiny pillow or something, because after I stored over 300 gigs worth of footage onto it, it stopped working. I took it to a data recovery specialist, and they quoted me $950 to repair it. Oh boy, I mean, I gotta go for it. The stuff on this hard drive's priceless. But then they were like, actually, there's nothing we can do, idiot, loser. You see these pictures we sent you? That means it's too damaged beyond repair. What were you doing to this hard drive? Were you throwing it on the ground? Were you hitting it with a hammer? So, unfortunately, we will never get to see games 63 through 99.
Hey, are you crying?
No. Who are you?
I am your fairy Fortnite godmother. I'm here to help you.
Are you going to use magic to fix my hard drive?
What? Do you think I have magical powers?
I don't... Yes?
Magic can't change the fact that you saved all of your important, irreplaceable footage onto a single hard drive, stupid. But luckily, my child, you don't need any magic. You have Fortnite Did you know that Fortnite automatically saves your last 50 or so matches as a replay file that you can go back and watch later? This is a miracle! Because of replay files, we didn't lose any gameplay footage. We did, however, lose the webcam, so you won't get to see my live reaction or witty commentary during any of these games, which sucks, I know. I did this whole bit where I kept losing, so I became a sweat.
We're cracked! We're going!
But I'm just happy we're able to recover any gameplay footage at all, and I've also learned to back everything up. So with that little hiccup taken care of, how did I do with visual sounds turned on? Well, let's take a look at match...
And boom. He's gone. Ooh. Take that medallion, and there's a bunch of legendary guns, and I actually grab two of them. Two legendary guns. Circle real small. And then... Victory Royale. Very anticlimactic fight. But actually, now that we have a replay... So you, and me. So they have like very low health. You have this health. Yeah, gotta get out of the storm, bro. Get out of the storm. Couldn't make it out. Gator guy's the winner.
You might say that a win is a win, but I kind of wanted a win where I pulled the trigger to get. So I did pretty well in match 63, but match 64, I got 81st place. So, am I actually getting any better?
There goes my crown.
In match 65 and 66, I got second place back to back.
Here I am looking for the last guy. Here's the last guy sitting on the roof. Here's his business turret looking. Both are right here on top of each other. Don't see each other. We're running. I still don't see him. Ooh, turret gets a lot of damage on me. I run for cover in there. Turret still shoots me through the wall. And then this guy just waits for me to come out of the building. Yep. And then finishes me off.
Nothing really special happened for the next few games, besides getting 99th place on match 73 and getting 79th place on match 79th, which was the only time that the place number matched the match number, so that's pretty cool, I think. But then big things happened in match 8. It had taken me so long to complete 100 games that Fortnite changed seasons. There was a new ancient Greek themed update that's totally old news by the time I get this video done. Parts of the map changed, my favorite business turret was removed, and my level was reset to level 1. This was my first time playing in the new season. I was unfamiliar with all the new locations and items, but I managed to get 5 kills and make it to the top 2. Me and the last player were shooting each other on our own hills, and then I decided it was time for some finishing moves. Is the storm getting close? Because I think I hear some thunder!
Oh, look at that. Almost missed. Exploded the tree right behind him. And they're like, oh, we're doing a lightning fight? We can do a lightning fight. Bam, oh, and that's it. Oh, they didn't want to overdo it. Oh, that's nice.
Then, in my very next match, I got 6 kills and was once again in the top 2.
Oh, I hope it didn't glitch out right there.
I had done it. My very first Fortnite win.
We both, have not loaded our guns. She misses. I hit her. She misses again. Really? Look, we're both reloading at the same time. As soon as I'm done, boom! Final kill.
It didn't really feel like a clutched game, you know? There weren't really any pro gamer moves. We were both running around fumbling to see who could load their gun first. But we're not getting points for style, okay? This is a win that I finally earned. Of course, you'll never get to see how I reacted in this moment. The best I can do is an artistic recreation. I kept grinding the 100 games to see if I could earn any more victories, and for a while, I couldn't even get back to the top 2. I knew I was running out of chances to clutch out more wins until I played match 90. Now, this footage is a little corrupted. I landed in Rebel's Roost and started exploring a house that isn't loading in the replay footage, and I found a legendary gun inside of a regular old chest. I know it sounds unbelievable, you just had to be there. Then I talked to an NPC that I'd never seen before, Mina. I gave her a job to be my buddy, and she did something I didn't know an NPC could do. Every 30 seconds, Mina would scan the nearby area, revealing anything important. Chests, ammo boxes, even other players would become illuminated. This was amazing. I had a legendary gun, and now with Mina's scanner, no one could sneak up on me. I understand why people play with hacks now. This power is amazing. I think I'm in love. I got to the top 2, but once again, I couldn't keep my composure and choked right at the very end.
And then I'm healing up behind a rock. And then I didn't even see him over there. In a 1v1, I was unable to clutch it out.
That's now 8 times I've made it to second place, with only one of those times I was able to kill the last player. After getting 45th place in match 99, I decided it was time to revamp my strategy. For my 100th game, I was going to do something no other Fortnite player could do. I was going to study every game I ever played to see if I could find any patterns to help me win.
What's a Fortnite coach? We can look back and learn from our mistakes. We can study the Oh, yes, baby. It's spreadsheet time. My favorite time besides snack time. I don't know about you, but I had just as much fun filling out the spreadsheet as I did playing Fortnite. And this time, I didn't lose the footage. Now let's see if we can find anything useful in all these numbers. Taking a look at all the places we got, you can clearly see it's a little all over the place. When I started this quest, I was expecting to see a graph more like this, where I would start off bad and then over time get better and better, getting closer to the number one rank. But in Fortnite, skill level does not necessarily translate to a better placement. Sometimes you and another player land in the exact same spot, and the first gun you grab is a sniper rifle, and all you see is the magnified barrel of a shotgun, and other times you can make it to the top 25 without ever seeing another soul. I did notice that in my first 31 games, I was getting a pretty low placement, but then once I started to get the hang of the game, I would more consistently make it into the top 10. I mean, sometimes I would still die quickly, but it was less frequent. Now let's see if we can find a pattern in the data that would translate into getting a better place. Maybe the secret to getting in the top 10 is getting a lot of kills. If we compare the amount of kills I got each match with the placement, we see... Okay, I'm seeing a little bit of correlation here. The more kills we have, the better we tend to do. But sometimes I got 2 kills and made it to 79th place, and other times I got 1 kill and made it to the top 11. Technically speaking, you don't even need to get a single kill to get a victory royale if the other players are shit enough. But I think you'll be surprised to see what happens when we compare the placement with the length of every match. Now that's some correlation. The matches that were longer, we did better in. I think I'll apply this strategy to my 100th game. In order to not die, you have to stay alive. I'm a genius. Now let's shift gears and talk about every player who ever killed me. Boo! Here are all of their IP addresses, and here are their mother's houses, and most importantly, here is everyone's recorded playtime. Now we can determine who among my killers don't shower, and that'll make me feel better to losing to them. If we add up all of my killers' playtimes, we get an average playtime of 301 hours and 37 minutes. Now, gamers, if you've played a video game for over 300 hours, are you considered a sweat? I honestly don't know where we should draw the line, but let's just say for the sake of this video, if you're above a 301 average, you're a sweat. However, since it took forever to make this video, and Fortnite changed seasons yet again, we can check back in on these gamers in 3 months to see if the players we deemed as sweats do indeed play more Fortnite than everyone else. Some people played a little, some people played a lot, and someone even quit the game entirely after killing me. Now, I don't want to sound mean, but these gamers played an average of 50 hours and 6 minutes of Fortnite. I said mean, which is like what, 33 minutes a day or 3.9 hours a week? That just sounds like a nice Saturday. Now, what can we do with all this information? Nothing. This is just a reminder to set your account to private because people on the internet are weird. Now, that's all well and good, but which gun is the most deadly to us? Here's a list of everything I ever died to in the game. Looking at the data, we actually have a tie for most deadly gun, with shotguns and ARs both getting 30 kills on me, and the most deadly rarity being a pretty close tie with rare guns getting 24 kills and epic guns getting 25 kills. So we want to be extra cautious if our opponent has a rare or epic shotgun or AR. Someone write that down. I really wanted to see if there was something in the data that would definitively prove that I was improving at the game. I wasn't happy with just looking at the placements because they were all over the place, but I think I found something that does indeed prove I am getting better. My accuracy. Plugging in all the data, we get this scatter plot, which looks exactly like a target I would shoot during practice. But if we look at the scatter plot trend, my average accuracy at game 1 was around 22%, and by game 99, we're getting an accuracy of 31%, boys! That's 9% more accurate! That's improvement in my book! This abundant arithmetic is all well and good, but there's something we're missing. Which gun that I was shooting gets the most kills? Oh, you'll have to excuse me. I gotta get going. I'm hosting the...
How are you guns all doing tonight? Before I give out these awards, I would like to give an honorary Best Assist trophy to the Business Turret. On record, the Business Turret was able to assist with 15 different kills. Unfortunately, Business Turret is unable to be here, so Porta Bunker will be accepting this award on their behalf. Alright, in third place, with 24 kills, we have Rare Shotguns. Thank you, Rare Shotguns, you're always there for me. In second place, with 27 kills, we have the Uncommon AR. Nice job, buddy. Keep up the good work. And the winner of the 2024 Fortnite Gun Awards are, with 33 kills, my eyes see the Uncommon Shotgun. So, going into game 100, we need to make sure we're equipped with the shotgun that's uncommon. Actually, this whole thing's stupid. Just because I got the most kills with the uncommon shotgun doesn't mean it's the best gun. It means it's the most common. I mean, uncommon. I'm sorry for wasting everyone's time. Let's just get back into the... By this point, I knew that I lost the footage for games 63 through 99. This was my last chance to get a victory royale on camera. It's do or die. For this legendary match, my girlfriend did something really sweet and gifted me a skin of a guy in an alligator costume, meaning I could finally be the real Gator Guy 333 and still not spend any money on a free game. Thanks, babe. During the first 99 matches, I would sometimes add silly little commentary even though no one was ever going to watch the footage.
Honey, did you leave the chest on the kitchen counter again?
But for this momentous match, I was going to remain completely silent. I needed all of my focus to be on the game. I landed in Zeus's Pantheon and immediately got 3 kills. A very close call. One more bullet would have done the trick. The most important match of my life almost ended with me in 84th place. So, admittedly, combing through the 21 hours of footage to fill out my spreadsheets took quite some time. So much time that they changed the game once again. They added a new item called the Legendary Banana. What does that do?